Good morning, everybody. It's 9 o'clock a.m. It is Tuesday, October 29th, 2019. We're gathered for a general discussion on the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. Our first item on the agenda is introductions with Judge Thusen.
Well done, yes.
Nice. And, Judge, you're here with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, would you be willing to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely.
What brings you to Josephine County?
Well, you know, I recently was appointed as a judge here by the governor. What brought me here was a recent change in the law that changed the residency requirements for judges in counties. It used to be you either had to be a resident of the county or your principal place of business in the county. However, the rules were recently changed to allow for residents or attorneys practicing in adjacent judicial districts, which includes Jackson County, where I currently live. I've always wanted to be a judge. It was one of those things, part of my future plans in my legal career. And this opening came up, and so I saw that as a really good opportunity to, you know, reach for it. And I was lucky enough to get that appointment through the governor's office. And I'm really excited to be here. I live in Central Point and have for the last 9 years, where my wife and I are raising our three daughters. They're all middle schoolers, and my wife's an elementary school teacher there.
Wow.
Long-term plans are to move over here, but it's really hard to disentangle everything.
immediately. So, Dad, we're not moving.
Oh, I've already heard that from, I've got 13-year-old twins.
School, you're not taking my friends.
Yeah. I have 13-year-old twins and one of which has already made it very clear this isn't happening. But, you know, my wife's in charge.
And she's the spokesperson for the whole group.
So we're going to be working towards that. But as far as my legal career goes, I started out at the Jackson County District Attorney's Office as a prosecutor for just under 6 years. My practice was mostly focused in juvenile law, mm-hmm. so between dependency and delinquency work. However, I, of course, did some adult criminal prosecution mixed in there. It's unavoidable at a district attorney's office. And then the last three-plus years, I've worked as an assistant attorney general with the Oregon Department of Justice, representing child welfare, doing exclusively dependency, foster care, adoption types, type cases. In fact, I've worked with Mike Sanchez, married to... you don't have the same last name as
Harper.
Right? As Ms. Harper. And then I was granted this appointment. Besides my legal career, I've been very involved in my local community. I was on the Central Point City Council for the last 5 years, the last 3 years of which as the council president. I was elected first in 2014 and then reelected in 2018. I had to resign my seat to take on this appointment. In addition to the city council, I've served on a school board for the Logos Public mm-hmm. Charter School. I think they also have a presence here mm-hmm. in Josephine County. I was on that school board for a little over a year. My wife taught at that school, which led the need for me to resign because there was too much of a conflict of interest in making decisions regarding, you know, teacher salaries and things like that.
Give them all raises.
Yeah. I was all in favor of that, personally.
In general, not because of...
But I've also been involved with coaching my daughters in basketball and soccer, and uh-huh. also coached the mock trial team at Crater High School for the last 7 years, which always loses to Grants Pass High School. But they try really hard every year. To me, it's important to be involved in our communities. I'm excited now to be a part of this community and grow as a judge and grow in this community.
When will you be up for election? How does that work with the appointments?
So the way it works is because I'm filling a term and I was appointed, I have to run in the next general election.
Oh, so soon.
Yeah, so if more than two people sign up to run against me, we will go to a primary in May. If only one or nobody, then it'll be on the November ballot.
Okay. Wow.
First election for you?
Well, city council.
School board
it wasn't like a school district. It was a little different with the charter school.
Oh,
so that was just an interview process. But city council, I got on there the first time in a contested election, someone who had been on the council for 12 years and just worked hard going neighborhood by neighborhood, door to door, to earn those votes. And,
very American.
So I've been, right. Yeah. So I've been through that process on a very small scale, and now we'll see what awaits me here.
Wonderful. What would you like to know about us, or what? My first question for you is:
yes.
Have you been assigned a courtroom or a task here? Are they keeping you in the juvenile lane, or do you get to mix it up?
So ultimately, those assignments are made by the presiding judge, Judge Bain. To begin with, you know, there's two of us that are new judges here on the Josephine County bench, and we are being kept in this main courthouse for now to basically learn the ropes. Judge McLaughlin has a predominantly criminal background. I have a little bit of criminal, but a lot of juvenile. We're both missing a little bit of family law and civil cases. So we're going to be over here under the close watch, I think, of Judge Bain. So we can learn a little bit more, because the law is so big. There are so many different practices. It's impossible to be to specialize in every area of law. So we're going to be given a good opportunity to learn. Whether or not I ultimately get assigned to just the family law cases or the family court doing juvenile, I don't know. I would enjoy that, but I'll just do whatever I'm asked to do. Yeah.
Very good. Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
Glad you made it over to Paradise here in Josephine County.
It's nice.
also, one of the advantages is I was an electrical contractor here forever, and every time we got a job in Medford, you had to drive over there in the morning and the sun was in your eyes, and you had to drive home and the sun was in your eyes. So you were fortunate to be going the opposite direction.
Very good.
That will
I
help.
I had the same thought about the commute, about the sun in your eyes.
It's definitely east and west. It is not north and south. When I was a kid, I was sure I-5 only went north and south.
Right.
but come to find out, if you look at a map. Bet, glad you're here. Sounds like you're going to fit in with your community involvement, coaching, and I guess advising on the debate team. But that is all very cool. I hope that does not necessarily end, because we need good folks to be involved. So thanks for that.
Absolutely.
And I'm Dan DeYoung, and I welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
I think that's one of the holes in our operation. We get backed up upstairs. You know, we get a lot of, you know, and we'll be very welcome to see that move along smoothly. And I appreciate the fact that you're not well-versed in everything and you're willing to learn. So I'm at the point where I'm not well-versed in anything and I'm not willing to learn. So
wait a minute. You're using air conditioning.
I am stuck.
What's the firing order of...
I am stuck. There's one thing you need to remember about me. 1-843-6572. Nothing else. That's the firing order of a General Motors V8 engine. And you're not getting along just fine.
Awesome.
But just remember to buy your fuel here on your before you go home.
Okay.
Buy the fuel over there and then transfer. You buy the fuel here so we get the road tax.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Supporting your community. That's it. Right. That's the only requirement out of my little corner of the world here. But welcome aboard. We appreciate you.
Thank you very
appreciate
much.
Appreciate you here. And it sounds to me like you're going to fit in the community very well. And I've always considered Grants Pass to be the bedroom community for Jackson County, because they get a lot of hustle and bustle over there. And when you drive over here at the end of the day and say, you know what, now I can breathe a sigh of relief about Rogue River, because now I'm out of that, and I would like to live here. And I know your kids are very deeply entrenched in the school system. I was fortunate; I never had to move when I was a little kid.
Oh boy!
From one school to another, that's got to be traumatic.
Yeah.
And I've never had to do that. So I can sympathize with your girls when they say, "All my friends are here, Pop. You know, you got to drive every day. I don't care." And you listen to your family, because they're the ones that are going to stand behind you if anything ever goes wrong. Okay?
But
welcome to Josephine County.
Thank you very much.
And sometimes it's nice for a police officer, a police chief, a sheriff deputy, a judge, not to be in Fred Meyer and Safeway to see some of the folks you've seen in official capacity. So if you choose to still live over there, I'm sure there would be understanding. in that regard.
Appreciate well, that. And I've always heard that life as a judge is kind of lonely in that in those terms, because you do have to have that neutrality. And I mean, many of the judges are friends with other folks, but you,
sure.
It is, it's kind of that way in our lines of work too. You kind of get to a point, and you know who. I don't know. It just changes things, especially with elected office, as you've seen. But as council president and the city council experience going through those elections, you realize it's about relationships. And I know the county and the courts have this unique relationship because of how it was set up with us to provide the building space
yes.
for you guys. But, you know, I think the bigger picture, I like that we have our local public safety coordinating council. We're supposed to be looking at the community as a whole. One of the things I'm proudest of that we've done since we've been in office this last couple years is the school outreach officers, where we received tax money through marijuana dollars and alcohol and drug tax as well. And we've put prevention officers into the schools to intervene before they go into delinquency.
Great.
And so we have one assigned in the Illinois Valley to work at the junior high and high school, one out at Hidden Valley High School with their junior high and high school, North Valley High School, and then Grants Pass High School. So our four county schools over here each have one. And that's separate from a school resource officer. That's an actual uniformed police officer mm-hmm. doing that side. So they work as part of the juvenile department, but the intention is to intervene and help to try to see if they can keep them from doing delinquency. And Dave Valenzuela, our school superintendent, has said there's a direct correlation already to some kids finishing that would not have. And graduation and coming back in the fall, they called every kid coming into school this fall and said, is there anything that you guys are facing that you're concerned about? Can we help in any way? And so kind of that social worker mentality, because we realize that if we're responsible for the economy and the community and providing services, you have to have a workforce. So
absolutely.
It goes back to the schools. How do you get kids through school?
Yeah.
We have an internship program that we're supporting countywide as well.
Which is amazing, by the way.
It is.
And you come all the way over here.
Why, it's our rock star. It takes the
for,
bus
for this,
in.
That's so right. great.
Yeah. So our bus ride just to come see us in the morning is not my idea of fun, but I'm grateful. Because it means that if we are investing in our youth, what's the future of our community? And that's
absolutely.
Really something that is the last couple years has taken off. This is all new programs in the last 2 years. So I'm proud of those opportunities. And I want to see the justice system work well. So we're glad to have you on board.
So can I ask you a question about that? When I was a prosecutor in Jackson County, I went out with a public defender, one of our juvenile court judges, and a probation officer from the juvenile department, and we went to various middle schools and just gave a presentation like, this is who we are, this is what we do in this justice system, so we don't want to see you, and this is the things that you can do to avoid seeing us.
Yeah.
Do you know, if has anything been done like that here to the high schools or the middle schools? I saw a lot of value in it. I mean, I couldn't tell you any statistics on if it actually improved the situation, but it was really neat to give the kids and the students that type of access, because you know most of them don't see a judge unless they're in trouble.
I haven't heard anything in the
yeah.
county schools. I know they do a career day focus at Grants Pass High School, and you spoke at that, and they bring in the other schools. Wyatt, what was that day called that you guys came into Grants Pass High School a couple weeks ago?
That was a career fair.
Just a career fair of sorts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they bring in all different types. But actually having the juvenile team go to the junior highs and work as a team.
Yeah.
Because one of the things we have right now is we outsource to DOJ the juvenile prosecution. And at some level the probation officer is kind of the DA in the court over there. But as far as the district attorney's office handling the cases with the juvenile PO, it's Department of Justice doing that now. Or is that just delinquency?
That's just the dependency. The child welfare cases
okay.
is, yeah.
So we still have a DA over there?
Last I heard.
Oh, my bad. I knew we got rid of something.
Week, I guess
it's, child support.
It's just child support. There we
right.
go.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
So just the child support. I've never heard of the POs going out there. I do know the juvenile POs work closely with the school outreach officers. And they go back and forth in referring and such like that. And we have one school resource officer between all the schools in the county.
Okay.
The city provides their own for the Grants Pass High School
right.
system, so I don't know what they have.
But that sounds like a great
it does.
Program for some new judge to start.
Yeah.
take all the credit for?
No, it'll be the commissioner's credit. It was your idea.
I'm just chucking in with you.
Then it's all yours.
It is a neat opportunity, though, and especially for... I don't know if the Scared Straight programs work in general, but there is something to understanding a career opportunity and understanding what is out there. And we have, it can go two ways. Take out fear of it or put fear in it. I don't know.
It's nice to put some fences around it a little, because you guys would supply that as there's lines. Yeah. And when you cross them, you're going to have to come meet us. And that's not a fun place to be for you or your families.
And we really don't want to see you.
That's right.
We want you to be successful.
I don't want to see you on the soccer field and the basketball court. I don't want to see you here.
Right.
I think one of the values is that they're going to see you without your robe on.
Yeah.
You know, they're used to seeing a judge. Well, a judge is, you know, everybody in these
years. Right.
They don't, it's hard for them to figure you're just a human being. Yeah, hi, right. I'm a judge.
Yeah.
What? You're a judge? Yeah, anybody can be a judge. Kind of. But I'm your judge.
I'm proof that anyone, anybody can be a judge.
It has that human element to being a judge.
No, absolutely. And I've seen, that the value in having our school resource officers or your outreach officers. Like, you know, these are sworn police officers who ordinarily carry a gun, but they actually care about my well-being and that I'm going to school. And so, kind of expand that with the whole core team. I think. That's something I want to explore. See if Judge Bain is willing to allow me to do something like that.
Jim Goodwin at our juvenile department would be a good resource to connect you. He's got a good relationship with all the schools.
Sure.
And they were in touch through our situation of having juvenile detention shut down for 5 years. He's been that resource and such. So we can definitely connect you to the right people to see about how that would happen.
Well, and he's been in it over 10 years, I imagine. And he's the state leader in his organization.
He's the juvenile, association chair for the next 2 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that my judicial assistant is working on setting up a meeting with me and Mr. Goodwin. So
we'll
go from there.
Well, a judge was probably the turning point in my life, you know, because I visited Judge Wally Martin quite often. And
as a younger man,
Wally had a bit of advice for me: start being good, or you'll spend more time with me. So I joined the Navy this week in this building. I came down here on lunch hour. A friend of mine says we're going to lunch. I said, "Where are we going to lunch?" He goes, "We're going to the courthouse. We're going to join the Navy. We're out of here because if we don't."
Sure.
We're going to go to the House of Many Doors, and we don't want to do that either. So so we left.
So you got out so you wouldn't destroy your community, and you came back to improve it. So success story right there.
I came back, and lo and behold, you know.
Ran a successful business for many years.
It was
community leader.
It was a turning point, and Judge Martin, you know, he was pretty influential on a lot of kids my age back then.
That's awesome. Those are the kind of judges that are examples to me. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, wonderful. Any other questions you have for us?
Just a couple. You talked about the upstairs being a clog point, a clogging point for the county. How is the relationship in general between the county and the court? And what do you see something that I can do or we can do to improve that?
Well, we're kind of the engine room of the county, and your operations and navigation up there. When we run into somebody in the hall, we say, "Well, we go on here." We just point skyward. We don't know what's up there, so that's where you need to go. But I just think that the law is so confusing and complicated.
Yes,
I'll give you an example. My brother-in-law had a case that he was to testify with on an armed robbery in his own home, and he was called to court 12 or 13 times, and it was always postponed because the judge had a tummy ache, the DA had a tummy ache, kids in school, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But 12 times or 13 times, and it was told to me by somebody in the legal profession across the pond over there, "Well, maybe your brother-in-law just doesn't understand how this thing works." Well, my brother-in-law was a court reporter for the Admiral of the 7th Fleet for 20 years. I think he knows his way around a courtroom. And it was just very frustrating to him as somebody that knows, just why is these delays?
Right.
But it was always something. It was the rights of the accused, and he didn't like this court-appointed attorney, so he wanted another one. That was back and forth. So, you know, and that's kind of frustrating to the folks out here on the street. Why is he still here?
Yeah.
You know, why hasn't he gone somewhere else?
Yeah. So,
and I think we've always seen that we needed a couple more judges. So.
And hopefully now that we do have a full bench of five for the first time ever, I'm hopeful that, I mean, I don't know that we're ever going to get over a defendant's ability to delay, you know, the inevitable.
Probably.
Hopefully with five of us now, other things that tend to clog the system will be dealt with quicker.
Well, just in our own legal team, you know, we hired Augustus, and gosh, he's just been, you know, that he took... Yeah. He took in a section that was being overlooked, and the frustration when Commissioner Morgan and I sat here and said, how many of these complaints do you have? Well, 700. We went, what? You know, and so legal stepped up, and we hired Augustus, and this is exactly all he does. And we're starting to process and see some growth in that area and some closure on some of that stuff. And that's what I'm looking forward to from the upstairs, the on high up there, the bridge, if you will.
We'll try to do our part.
Yeah. Well, and with the pivot in Oregon and maybe nationwide to really trying to help folks instead of just straight up incarcerate, we have a tipping point in our county where a lot of folks felt desperation. There aren't any good jobs. There's not opportunity. My parents didn't provide a path for me or whatever it was. Things are much better now, and people are finding jobs because of the economy and because of the size of our county. And so we hope the courts will be part of that catalyst to success and not just the punitive, you know, let's make sure everybody's punished. And then secondarily, we have the Grants Pass Police Public Safety moving out of that building. And so we've got a movement of departments, of a need for another courtroom, a need for some areas to be separate from others for CJIS and public access. And so we've got an interesting year or two coming up that you will now be a part of.
Great.
That we're hoping for honest and realistic input to make that the best it can be, and we don't make any missteps along the way. So that's part of the consideration coming up.
We've kicked around a municipal court because one of the things that's frustrating people, oh, they don't write tickets anymore. Well, because 80% goes to the state, 20% stays here, so why do it? You know, you're spending more time than it's worth type of a thing. Well, that doesn't resonate well out here.
Sure.
So, you know, we've kicked around a municipal court, and every time we get the feedback that it's way too expensive, it'll never pay for itself. But just sometime if you... got a minute, I'd like to see what your thoughts are on a municipal court and if it would or wouldn't work in your estimation, because you're on that end of it. I'm on the end from out there, people saying, why don't they?
Yeah.
And I'll need those answers.
Well, I know, you know, for Central Point, we found that it was too expensive to run our own municipal court. So we contracted with Justice Court, the County Justice Court.
Okay.
And that was
I don't understand... Yeah. The cost of running a municipal court, I guess. You know, I guess that's what I'm probably asking for, because I'm not looking at the whole picture. I'm looking at we have courtrooms all over the place. You know, you could do it out at the Parkway Fire Hall, for crying out loud, in their meeting room. You know, it'd be low key in the evening and stuff. But you know, you got to judge. But what all do you have? What all's involved in doing that? Because you know, when they're passing out tickets for, you know. Speeding's 300 something bucks. Cell phone's
285.
220?
I think it was 40 or 60.
260 something. So I'm going right to the source here. So it's hard to believe that for 5 minutes of time, 260 bucks, and it's burn up somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested in that.
I'm happy to sit down and talk. I can't say that I know everything about that. But I'm happy to sit down with you sometime and talk about that.
I would say the relationship the county has, for the most part, is respectful, but we operate independently, obviously.
Right.
It's not our courts, it's the state courts. Though We do, as a county, offer services to the courts that have been a courtesy that we're not compensated for, and that community corrections is a county function that we offer supervision for misdemeanor supervision that is not funded by the state. So in Oregon, since the mid-90s, Senate Bill 1145, the state parole services are offered through the counties. And so county probation, state parole are all together. And they fund the felonies at a percentage a day that they're on supervision, but we do not get funding for misdemeanors.
Oh, I didn't know that.
A couple exceptions. So there's many counties that opt out of supervising misdemeanors. Jackson County is one of those. And we choose, through an arrangement with the courts, just a professional courtesy, we offer that supervision. So there is a layer there, but it is not something we're compensated for or have funding necessarily for, but because of the relationship with the courts, they've offered to do that. But the county at some point could say, we're not going to provide supervision for misdemeanors any longer, and many other counties have gone that route. So that is one area that I would point out that we're different than Jackson County in.
Okay.
And, you know, for the most part, it is, you know, the municipal offices here and down in the basement, and we share the Ann Basker next door for jury services. So today they had, every Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock, all the jurors show up and then get marched up through the hallways to wherever they're going. And then that's where we have our weekly business sessions next door as well.
Okay.
So that building is shared between the and with maintenance and different costs, we take some of them on and the courts take some of those on. So we have a partnership with the infrastructure of, for instance, fiber optics and stuff. So it's been an interesting process through years. Any maintenance stuff upstairs goes through us. And but sometimes the funding goes through you guys, so
very complex.
Yeah, so it's kind of that. We have a good relationship with Trina Swajan right now, the trial court administrator. We did with Kurt before as well, but I think there is importance in knowing historical knowledge of where we've been, but also being willing to say what works best and where do we adjust and how do we go from there. So. For the most part, yeah, we share building space, but function completely separate from each other's acknowledgments and other than direction giving. Go up, you know, like Mr. Dion said.
Is that like your part, half of your job is just telling people to go upstairs?
Yeah, you look lost.
I don't go there anymore.
Yeah.
I went there for the swearing in. It's the last time I was ever up there. It was 2.5 years ago. I'm not going back, I hope. I'm going to stay out of that.
Until next January.
Yeah, yeah. I got an uneasy feeling. I'm going to come up to your swearing in ceremony. No, sir.
Bring up some PTSD there.
Yeah, I'm going to stay out of that.
I love it.
Well, thank you for being willing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. So, we also administer our law library program, and Judge Hull used to frequently actually just ask our law librarian to do research, and he gladly did so. And so, you know, if you have some arcane issue that you don't personally have time to look into, but would like a very experienced, you know, former attorney to look at, then that's a service that we offer, and I want to absolutely extend that to you.
Where is the law library here?
Directly next to the DA's office.
Oh, okay. Great.
So, for now, and then, yeah. I mean, that's a big part of the discussion.
Part of the movement, yeah.
Only with the
probably
with
the New York courtrooms today. I don't know. But,
who knows?
But please do, if you have any legal questions that you just need researched, that's one of the services we do provide.
So if you're in the hallway where courtroom four is,
yes,
and you go straight, you dead into the door that's the law library.
Okay.
So you pass courtroom four, past DA's office, straight ahead.
He's out for the next couple weeks, but I can get you two in a room together because I think you'd probably hit it off.
Well, that'd be fantastic. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I mean, timelines get crunched on research for the judicial department, and you know we have a full law library.
And we don't have full-time law clerks down here like they do in Multnomah County or Lane County.
Yeah.
You know, usually brand new attorneys right out of law school who they just work full-time for the judge doing research and writing and,
That's something the county does.
Sure.
Down here, so. Cool. Anyway, but yeah, I just wanted to extend that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate you taking the time for us.
Well, absolutely. Thank you all for creating this opportunity and thank you all for doing what you do. I know that working at this level of government, has a greater impact, I think, on the day-to-day lives of the citizens than what's happening up in Salem. However, you don't get the attention or the participation that you deserve. Well,
we get a lot of attention. Yeah.
maybe
some of it is self-inflicted.
Let me rephrase that. You don't get the appreciation, the gratitude that you do deserve for creating a very nice and livable community. So,
well,
thank you.
All three of us were elected to the city council, what,
11
years
ago?
Oh, really?
Okay. In 2010, on the heels of a recall that recalled a quorum. All of them went away. So they had a special election. All three of us were on. Commissioner Morgan has been council president for 3 years.
I was in 2012 and 13.
Okay.
And then I was council president for 3 years. And then Commissioner Fowler was the mayor for...
6 years.
6 years. So, you know, we all kind of chewed our cud on the city council side of it, as you did over there in Central Point. So, but it was just, that's a real thankless job. This one here is thankless. That's really thankless because there's no paycheck at the end of the day. So... But here, you know, I think we've all got good background. And you having been on the city council, you understand how that thing works also. So.
More of the politics than most.
Exactly. Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, we're here to help you in any way we can.
Thank you. And if you ever want a sit-down, I'll make myself as free as possible to do that. You know, I've got a couple mornings a month that are just reserved for... not court and office and meeting time, so we'll make that happen.
Okay.
Don't worry, they'll fill those in soon.
Right. Well, they are so far. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Take care.
Next on our agenda is the Community Development Quarterly Update, and we have our director, Mark Stevenson, with us this morning.
I thought that was
pretty good. Good morning, Commissioners.
Yeah. I was tempted. I went to. I'm like, I don't have to. Like, what?
I don't think we're in a robe situation.
Thank you.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I know you have a thankless job, and I'm thankful for all of you.
Appreciate that.
So, quarterly update for community development. Just wanted to go quickly through this. Our accomplishments, we've completed several different text amendments addressing issues such as VRBOs, Airbnbs. We've reviewed and modified existing policies and procedures for clarity and consistency. Some of the old policies I've been working on, still working on those, still proceeding on those. Some of them are outdated, some of them are no longer relevant, other ones needed some definite changes to them. Policies and procedures, including more text amendments for oversight on mass gatherings, and still recognizing the minimum standards of the statute, but with new emphasis on the safety for those mass gatherings. So these text amendments will be coming to you fairly soon.
What's VRBO?
What's that?
What is VRBO?
Vacation rentals by owner. We looked at what the city of Grants Pass was doing, and we came up with a good plan for that for the county, and we'll present that to you.
Thank you.
And the Airbnb, basically, we just added that into our code, but those are all through text amendments.
Is that going to kind of clear up the mess we have out there on Mountain View?
Yeah, it really does. It just brings clarity to everything.
That was just so much. That thing was clear in any way you turned on it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. There was no real.
We were just basically missing the language in there, and so everybody was confused on what does this mean? How do we handle these? What do we do with them? They're very simple. Home occupation takes the neighbors in agreement, you know. But these things will be brought to the board in time. So goals for our next quarter. It came to my attention that there's been a lot of changes at the state level, not only in LUBA cases, but in DLCD. and that information has not been assimilated into our department. There hasn't been any eyes watching those statutes or watching those changes or changes in the rules at the state level, and the state has not been necessarily open to making sure that planning departments are getting that information. So any changes that come down in land use have been kind of just done, and we haven't known about it. We haven't tracked it.
There are a lot of those. So,
well, my understanding is it hasn't been tracked since 2013, so yes, there was a lot of them. My goal is to, and I've already got on DLCD's email list, to send me all the information they can send me, anything that changes, and there's just a whole host of different areas of DLCD that information's coming all the time. That's my job to take that in. Two of the planners are taking on the LUBA cases and looking at LUBA cases as they come up and reviewing them and seeing where we need to make policy change and or text amendments to our code.
All right, so is that set in place to be a once-a-year review or just when a case comes out? Or
it's, for us, interdepartmental, it's constant. It's
right, when
know,
a case
on
comes
a weekly,
out, something changes.
Weekly looking at it, if we have to change basically our policy within the department to make sure we're meeting that criteria, we're going to do that. But as far as text amendments, as far as coming back to the code and adding those to the code, I have not had the opportunity to talk to Augustus about it. But there's got to be a means by which we get those changes into our code.
It's usually
but we
it's
can't
ordinance.
Do it.
Yeah.
They're all through ordinance.
Our Are they code, not our, just text amendments?
The
for,
entire code was adopted through ordinance.
Okay.
So any amendments has to be through an ordinance as well.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're invalid because it's a lower form of...
And I cannot imagine that we would bring it to you every month on every change that comes through. So this is a conversation I have to have with legal.
Right. There should be at least a quarterly or
biannually. Or maybe we need a quarterly update. Is there anything we need to add by ordinance every quarter?
But remember, every ordinance has to have two hearings, 14 days apart, and nothing goes into effect till 90 days after. So, and there is something to how many topics can be on an ordinance. Is it all just, okay, the topic is code update, and then here's all the areas that they are? Or is it something that it has to be code updates for these types of things, code updates for these types is a different ordinance? So that's one thing I would say that we should use, get clarification on is, because a ballot title is a one topic limit. How many can be on the ordinance?
Can Mark have the latitude to say, okay, there's an awful lot of stuff coming down in the state that does not apply to Josephine County. We've never heard a case on that. We've never had an opportunity to even rule on that, and just take the stuff that's relevant to us, you know, like there's some stuff on hemp that's going to be relevant to us, but it isn't in Harney County. So why should they even worry about hemp or whatever? You know, I have to use that as an example.
Stuff
that are hot topics for us, and that would narrow down the quarterly update or whenever you decide to do that.
Well, I would we don't know what we're going to face in the future or not, I think. So if there is a law, and my question would be, is it actually law? LUBA case or DLCD, is it necessarily mean they've been challenged in court?
You got to wait till it's finally decided.
Right.
Because
a
LUBA decision doesn't necessarily, it might have been a technicality that they remanded something and it not be about what the topic
the
was.
Meeting.
That happened with our hearing the other day. One of the testimonies was that, okay, you guys are making these changes based on a Lane County or Linn County case that was appealed by LUBA and remanded. So why are you making these changes when it got remanded? Well, why did it get remanded?
Was it specific to something in that?
They didn't.
Was it the actual change or was it a technicality? So understanding the difference there too.
It's not case law.
Correct.
It's not case law, so it's hard to do. Refer to it as case law when it's not.
I mean, we can look in our applications, we can look at those LUBA cases and make decisions based on, well, this is what we know, you know, from the Board of Appeals. But but we also get, you know, just simple OAR changes, new statutes that come through, and more importantly, we just need to keep up on those and bring those to the board as needed.
And kind of what we heard the other day, not discretionary, discretionary, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Is that kind of what you were saying, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one, I would add DLCD and LUBA and legislation,
right.
You know, legislative action, because that's even more definitive, because mm-hmm. once those happen, they kind of come down
and
as commandments.
You know, I follow yeah. that, the legislature on the building safety side, but also on the land use side also.
I right. Think. Right. Well, Oregon likes to fiddle with its land use. You know how that
it's all the time. And,
yeah.
you know, my understanding past directors this years ago spent the majority of their time just trying to track that stuff.
Golly.
I don't have that kind of time. But I do have time to do a portion of it, and we have time yeah. for other planners within the department to well, continue to just check those.
And your association and our AOC association comes out with legislative updates and
right.
and right. things that might change.
On the building safety side, through building officials, we get all kinds of information.
I bet you do.
A lot of that is land use also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're better at bringing that information.
Right, consolidating and telling
yeah.
you what happened.
From what I see from DLCD, I mean, the list is great. It's, I just checked all right. the boxes and send me all of it, and I'll just read through it.
Right,
but
which is rough.
It's just a means by which we can start getting that information,
sure.
make sure that our department is functioning correctly for statute, rule, what have you. I'm continuing to work on the existing policies and procedures, looking at staffing for personnel for code enforcement. They really need a department specialist just to take care of all this paperwork. I found finance has some marijuana dollars that could fund that position, and so that will be brought to you here fairly quickly. Also, looking at electrical inspector for building safety, because the cost of third-party electrical...
Oh,
the cost of third-party electrical services is just killing the electrical program for building safety. It's roughly $40,000 over what I could actually hire a staff person and bring them on. And I did have a
with
level,
benefits and everything?
With benefits and all, yeah. It's really the third-party stuff. We've managed, I've managed to cut it back a little bit, but it's still a huge draw on it.
Well, and that season's kind of over where we were down on inspections and contract made sense, and now we're back up.
Yeah, and we're doing a lot of that A-level electrical inspection stuff because of so many of the marijuana and hemp facilities that are all commercial. And all that electrical is commercial application, as we all
It right. takes a lot thicker process.
And you could just, and every night in the paper you can read and cross another one off of your list.
What, we're well, a barn burn or something?
I don't have that noted here, but I have changed the policy for the ag exemption under 455.315, the statute, which allows a exemption from the building code for agricultural structures. But it's very specific in the statute that says for structures, for structures that are under the state fire marshal's office, which would be hemp drying facilities is one of those, there is no exemption for it.
Now, along that line, I was out at a grow site the other day, an agricultural farming enterprise, and looked at their brand new drying bins, and I said, do you have a requirement for sprinkler or some sort of Ansel system or whatever? Mm-hmm. No, it's right there. And it was a fire extinguisher hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
And I said, I cannot imagine that. But then again, when these things go up, there is no stopping it. If you
right.
wet it down, it doesn't do anything.
Right.
Because it's more of an explosion. It's a mass
spontaneous combustion that the sprinkler system ran so it could stop it anyway.
The three structure fires we've had in hemp drying facility, that's just in our county, and there's other ones that are going up all over the state. All three of them had illegal electrical and mechanical systems in them. So what I put together is the statute allows the land use side to make the call whether it's ag exempt or not. But the application needs to go to building safety to have that review. Show us what you're doing. Show us the structure you're putting together. What systems are you going to put into this building so we can have better tracking of that? Because it used to be ag exemption was handed out like candy at the counter. Oh, you want to
listen?
And they didn't even realize it was from the building code. They thought it was like, oh, we don't have to pay taxes on that building or what have you.
Right.
So there was just this big cloud
confusion.
Well, this particular facility, it was top. I mean, it was, everything was in conduit. Well, I'm not an inspector, but everything was in conduit. They had a fire damper in their duct system. And, right. I mean, they had. It looked like they were certainly trying to, but I was just surprised because it was one of those double plastic things with the insulation in between it or air. Mm-hmm.
It's based on occupancy, so it's like a F1 occupancy.
Right, right.
If it's under 12,000, 12,000 feet or under, it doesn't have to be sprinkled.
Both of these are not that big a facility. But
the other thing we're running into is these buildings are being just shoved up against other buildings. Some of them are shoved up against residences, which is a violation of code also. So,
Definitely, there's no residences on the place. It was definitely farming and enterprise. And I was just curious because I thought, gee, you know, all these things that are going off like matchsticks, you know, you would think you would have to have, but then, you know, because we look at some of the buildings we have out in the fairgrounds that have standby water in them, and, you know, if it's, it's all on occupancy, but, you know, four horses and three jockeys, and you've got to sprinkle the whole building, you know, because of something. But I don't know. I was just curious. But I guess, you know, I have real concerns about. I would imagine it's going to change after all these things are popping like.
Well, I'm trying to do my due diligence, not only as director but as building official also, to really keep an eye on these structures. Somebody's going to lose their life. Mm-hmm. And I visited a site last week. And there was well over 100 immigrant workers in those buildings.
In tents and no conditions.
Yeah.
Not bathroom, kitchen.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And this particular place had illegal pellet stoves hooked up for heating in this building. Lots of illegal electrical as far as commercial installation. I got to say, their installation was very clean.
For
what they did do, but all illegal under the electrical code.
Well, so, I can't judge that, but I mean, I didn't see any explosion-proof sockets or anything like that.
Right.
Right now we have a place that has five 1,000-gallon propane tanks, mechanical hooked up, diesel, two diesel generators, mm-hmm. a fuel tank, zero permits on it, right next to a location where schools are taking all their children right now to visit the pumpkin patch. So notices have gone out to them, and the state fire marshal now knows about it. They're investigating, but
some of it to me never made any sense. And this is going way back, but over here when the feed and farm thing was down here, the Grange was down here by across from 3C's lumber company. Explosion proof lights, explosion proof plugs, explosion proof switches, and guess what I was working on inside there? An oil furnace. I said, what? Talk about open flame.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Well, this so the changes I made for agricultural structures and the review of those structures is consistent with Jackson County now, Klamath County, and Clackamas County. So we've all, you know, put our minds together with State Fire Marshal's office. So what are we going to do here?
Sure.
All of those counties have experienced the same thing.
But no matter what you have, there is for every 10%. Of people that want to abide by the code and keep their place from blowing up, hopefully. Mm-hmm. There's 90% of them out there that are just shoestringed in I'm going to do all this, make my bucks, and leave the land full of plastic, and I'm out of here. I don't care. I've already made my money, and I'm gone.
Yeah, agreed.
And they're,
we've seen it.
And we can't. It's getting worse, not better, with hemp being legalized now. You know, the Postmaster General was up at that summit. I said, what are you doing here, you know, for Pete's sake? He goes, I don't have any room for mail anymore. It's all I'm hauling is marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You go, whoa. Well, I heard a story yesterday about boxes delivered by FedEx. And it was crazy. And well, you go, this is happening under my nose. The guy said, I delivered 25 boxes. And one of them had the wrong address on it, so nobody picked it up. We couldn't deliver it. Didn't know what it was. After so many days, they open it, and it was full of money.
God.
Cash.
Well,
and they're delivering.
Not to digress, but I spoke directly to a man in the marijuana business. This is a year and a half ago or so. And he said he ships all his out of Eugene, all over the country. And he figures he has about a 20% loss. He said, what business doesn't run on a little bit of a loss?
Yeah, just calc it in.
And
mm-hmm. Mark, with
anyway,
there's always a balance of when does a building inspector get to inspect a building? Mm-hmm. You know, obviously when a permit is drawn, you guys get to inspect. Sometimes mm-hmm. if there's a safety concern, you get to inspect. But generally, you're not going property to property. Inspecting every property. No. We don't do that. No. We don't have the time, the energy, and
money.
Yeah. Nor
well, under the
right
code,
under
the, right.
the yeah. law to go onto people's property to look.
Correct.
But there is a concern about safety in the communities for people and these explosions and the fires that potentially can spread to other things. And you've stated that all three in our county have had illegal stuff going. Has there been any reach out to the State Department of Ag, who is supposed to be the regulating agency over these farms, to see if they are implementing anything because of the increased nature of danger? Who would have anticipated how many fires?
Right. The only knowledge I have of that, of ODA working towards some assistance for us, is requiring a lux on the properties.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're not requiring a lux unless you're
What's
processing.
A lux?
Land use compatibility Thanks. Statement. So they're coming, normally on marijuana, OLCC requires a lux. They come to us, we tell them if it's okay to grow on that property or not. They puts up a little bit of radar for us and go, okay, it looks like they're going to have processing or they're going to have some type of facility. And we can follow up on that. And we can clarify mm-hmm. with them what they're doing with the lux.
So lux is not an end-all. It just
no.
is a flag to tell you there's going to be a grow there. Because we
it's
can't
just
stop
a way
it.
That
it
we
simply
can track.
Does the land zoning allow it.
Right, right.
It
right.
doesn't say if they've had permits or look
no,
at anything there
simple
in the
designation,
neighborhood.
Yeah.
yeah.
Now, I've been in... I've had a lot of communication with... Department of Agriculture over the violation of Paradise Ranch with hemp growing there, and I can't say that I've had the best
Did they grow and harvest this year? Do you know?
Well, they grew. I don't know if they harvested. I have pictures of it. It didn't look like much to harvest, but
right.
under the
I
state's
thought they weren't home, allowed to do that because
they
it's
weren't.
A resort
they,
area.
He fought them the whole way.
They weren't. So I no. what I did was I went to ODA and said, what are you going to do about this? You issued the license on this property. They responded back to me and said that they can't enforce our zoning laws.
They're not our zoning laws. They're state zoning laws.
Exactly.
Exactly. But the
Oregon Department of Ag is absolutely washing their hands of any responsibility when it comes to
selective
hemp, marijuana and everything.
Yeah.
And Sunny Summers sat there at that summit, and they asked her, it's your department, how many of these things have you inspected? And she went, goose egg.
Yeah.
I don't have the resources to do it.
Yeah.
Then why doesn't she have the resources to do it? It's a goose egg. And she's in charge of the whole hemp thing now because we're farming. And those farmers think they can do any damn thing they want while they're farming, regardless of who's next door, regardless of who knocks on the door. And they're all holding up the sign, I'm a hemp farmer, leave me alone, and the sheriff has to drive by because nobody can tell whether that's got THC in it or not by looking at any stage of the game.
What I did was I requested all their statutes that pertain to their licensing and all, and found that if anybody applies to them fraudulently, that they can revoke the license. Well, I gave them enough information and evidence that they received their license after the county, after community development, had already notified the owner and the grower that they could not grow on that property. 3 days later, they applied for the license, and ODA gave it to them. So I said, it should be denied and revoked immediately under their statute. And I haven't heard a word. It's been 2 weeks. I emailed them last week. What say you?
But they're we need to know those things so we can take it to our state legislatures and through AOC and say we need help with this. Okay. Because we're held to the standard of the land use zoning, and it's at the state level they're not, so therefore we have to take it to the state level for them to enforce their own laws. Otherwise, exactly what you said, but it shouldn't just be on you. You pointed it out, but if they're unresponsive, that's when we can come alongside and help. Okay. I think that's where our advocacy comes into play.
It just boggles my mind what they're doing to the value of that property out there. Just that, you know, for what the intended use of it is, is its value.
Right.
And now it's just nothing more than a... Never mind. I won't talk. Disgusting.
All right. Okay, so building division, as far as numbers go, we are just booming. We're still 31 new single-family homes, 25 single-family additions, and 88 other structures that we've done. 1,926 field inspections. That's about 33 inspections a day over this large county.
Can I ask on that?
Yes.
1,926 field inspections on 50 homes, 56 homes?
No, just across the board. So okay. it could be simple wood stove inspections. It could be electrical. It could be on the new
home. And with construction, there could be 12 inspections.
Yeah, it's
15. Okay. Right.
I'm just trying to understand because it's not related to the single family dwellings or the 25.
Partially. It's just overall what the department is doing over those 3 months.
Because if it takes 1,900 inspections for 56 things, that's a lot of inspections. And
those are called the resident inspector.
So when
he just lives,
you know, when winter is nigh, and we're getting a lot of pellet stoves and wood stoves and things like that. So all the inspections that we do, basically, it's just showing that we're doing a lot of work out there.
Yeah.
Have you done a few ADUs along the way?
A few detached living.
I call them the old designation.
A few
DLS.
A couple, three, four.
Okay.
They're not coming in like I would have expected, but word's getting out, and people are getting in to see us. So. So it averages like 33 inspections a day for our inspectors, 136 plan reviews, which is just amazing. So that's sets of plans that come in, get reviewed, and sent back out. And we're turning those around in less than 10 days. We issued 776 permits for valuations of almost $13 million and collected that revenue, $283. Planning division.
Before you move on,
okay.
Just remind me the process. Somebody comes in, they go to planning to get permits.
They go to planning for a development permit.
They get issued the permits.
Correct.
And now it goes over to building division for the inspections along the way.
For issuing doing the plan review, issuing the permits for whatever they're constructing, and then the process of inspections after that.
Okay.
Yes. So planning division, 235 development permits. That's still up from last year. They've had 4,511 customer contacts in that quarter. They're averaging about 76 counter contacts and phone contacts a day. And like
justified the open hours more, right?
Yeah, you know, though, it's really working well. We get quite a few people that come in between 1 and 3, and people are used to it. And so, yeah, it was a good move. We have 100% development permits issued within the expected time frame. Actually, most of them are before the time limits. I'm gonna keep doing the Chinese torture drip here, but revenue totaled 115, but our cost of services was 176. So that extra money is coming out of the general fund. I still would like to, I'm just going to keep beating the drum of looking at ways of bringing more revenue into community development and covering those services. I don't think we could ever get to 100% no general funds. I don't think that's possible. But I think there is some room for improvement.
Yeah, there's some room to fee increase. And
yeah, just mm-hmm.
Your increase in value and assessed value gives the county about $19,000 is all.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Well, people say, well, you know, they're building, and if they have to have all that building, the assessed value, well, you're collecting taxes on all of that. But what you went up at $12.9 million mm-hmm. worth of assessed value equates to about $19,000 in tax revenue collected at a buck and a half. That includes the levy.
It doesn't offset.
So it's, you know, when people say, wow, every year, you know, and you think it really would be, I mean, $12 million, $13 million in valuation in assessed value, that's a lot. But when you're only in a buck and a half, it only went up $19,000.
Interesting,
My quick calculation could be wrong. But that's interesting. But yet you still brought in the $283,000. That was in what you collected for the price of the permit and the inspection.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct. And 12% of that goes back to the state for the building department. So 12% of that revenue goes to Building Codes Division for their services.
My apologies.
No problem.
On the discrepancy there, I know that you did make a recommendation for some fee changes that are coming.
Mm-hmm.
But is there also any of these areas that are standing out? Is it across the board the revenues and the costs are not meeting up, or is there specific areas that you're finding the biggest discrepancies in? And will the fees cover it, or is there going to be areas that's still outside of that area?
I do not believe that we can raise fees across the board on each type of application mm-hmm. and still not draw money from the general fund. The fees would be too far up there. Mm-hmm. But there are certain, you know, mind you, there's like 20 to 30 different types of applications. Some we're okay on, but other ones we lose a lot of money doing the work that's involved. Those are the ones I want to just visit and see where we can adjust that. And also, not only that, but possibly continue to look for redundancy in our processes mm-hmm. to save money.
And that's what I'm wondering, is there anything that in efficiency could be looked at, or in the process, is, you know, they have process experts that kind of look at, hey, this is the process you take.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can save time if you looked at this area and kind of went this route, and you'd still.
And that's exactly what I'm exploring daily is just to get rid of those the things we're doing that is not necessary, that we can move on to other, maybe increase the number of development permits, increase our workload
from
by cutting back on some of the redundancy.
No, I think the public would appreciate that.
Yeah.
Especially if they say, hey, I came in and met with you. You said this is good to go. Now I'm asking for the permit. And you want how much time? You know,
right.
That's the complaint that I've heard from folks about, we already talked about all this,
sure.
You know, and you know what was coming. But mm-hmm. At one point I remember you saying it and generically, because I don't remember the specifics, but planning and building division aren't always communicating between the two either, and so what's being asked here is not exactly what the inspectors are looking for. Have you had an opportunity to look at those areas too?
We absolutely have corrected a lot of that. There's far better communication. I mean, there was, when we became a community development department, that communication changed greatly, but it's still needed to be fine-tuned, and we're still working on that communication. The ag structures is just one more point that we're trying to clear up. We're trying to get that communication between planning and building and make sure that we're giving the right information out there. Still work to do, but we're plugging along on it. So,
how best can we help you?
Just be open like you are. I keep bringing things to you and communicating with you, and I get great response and great assistance. So
as I bring them forward.
Cool.
I would just, I want to see you pump up that code enforcement thing. I had another one in yesterday. A guy says, I don't know where I am on the list or if I'm even on the list. And he showed me pictures of it, and it's just horrible, some of the stuff they're putting up with. And he says, and I filed complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint. Nobody even calls and says I even got my complaint.
Right.
So that's understaffed in your code enforcement side.
I totally agree.
You've got to be there. You know, I want you to really step that up because that's the part that people see.
Right.
They don't see a lot of the little stuff, but they do see code enforcement. When we start cleaning up properties and boarding them up and taking care of them, the people, all the neighbors go, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Right.
And that's the visible part of
the policies. The policies and procedures I changed last year is, you know, it's a great thing. That's all changed. The problem is not enough staff to fully implement that. And those compounds and all take so much time of Denise's time, even Michelle's time, as well as solid waste. And so it's important right now that we get somebody in the office, just do that busy work. And then I can even see possibly having like another field person for her, or possibly another office person to.
Well, I'm told that she spends so much time in the office filing paperwork that she can't get back out in the field.
That's true.
You know, if we can hire just, a couple and then other that's one where those. Time.
That's where a lot of those little ones kind of get
right. They get pushed
they
up,
get left
this
behind,
one here,
even though we're trying to keep
this
up.
This is not a little one. He's had been on the radar forever. Mm-hmm. They had a meth lab blow up there about a year and a half ago. They've had everything possible happen there. Mm-hmm. Every time there's anything on this particular property, there's multiple felons on board, and they're still there. Mm-hmm. And this thing's gone on for year after year after year after year after year. And it's time for a raid. Mm-hmm. It's time for something.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's frustrating. And by the time it gets to us, the guy is so mad he can't hardly even spit.
Right.
And, you know, you try to placate him. You try to say, okay, calm down. So, calm down my, you know what. Mm-hmm. I'm done calming down. And I just don't want people to gather up and take the law into their own hands and clean it up themselves. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't communicate, or we didn't, and there's some certain amount of communication. Yeah, we're going to raid it on Tuesday. No, you don't want to get involved in that, but just to let them know that, hey, you know, we're looking at this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to follow through, and I got the address, and I'll follow through. And I went to one out in Lone Mountain Drive the other day, and I went, you have got to be kidding me. The mailman can drive by and see what's going on there.
Right.
And yet, it's been going on for years, and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating to people. Including myself.
Agreed.
So on the back of page one is code enforcement numbers.
Yeah, still right around 938 violations open.
Can I ask what time frame?
This is July to October.
So those are 938 new.
Oh, excuse me. No. I'm sorry. No, these are everything we have open, period. Time frame, I'm not sure.
All right,
a lot
new
of them are old.
Quarter.
But new for the 3 months is 66 new violations. Now, we're taking on more in building safety and trying to nip these in the bud prior to them winding up in code enforcement. So just last week I did another 18 letters out of just things we've seen rather than, and these are agency complaints, so these would be complaints through building safety. When we see something going on and we know they don't have permits, I've been sending alleged violation letters out. I'm getting a great response. I get about 100% response. People call right away.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not charging them to come out and look at it. All I want to do is get an inspector out there to look at what you're doing, and then we'll help you get the proper permits.
So you take a book at home.
Right. And then we're just being proactive that way rather than it just becoming a neighbor's complaint. Wind it up in code enforcement, and then from there, where it goes. And I'm virtually right now, I'm at 100%. People are calling back in, and we're able to go right out and kind of handhold them in a nice way. And okay, you do need permits for that huge shop you just built. Come see us, you know.
Right.
How many of the violations It would be worth knowing, one of the things that came against us a couple of years ago was we were told there's this many violations, and some were 10 years old or mm-hmm. something like that. I don't know if that could be considered an open violation if it wasn't responded to in a timely fashion.
Well, these are definitely, there's probably some in that 938 total that are 10 years old. I know this, in the building safety division, we were given 122 from code enforcement. And a lot of those are from 2002, 2004.
Okay.
We've closed 48 of those so far. And out of that 48, there's probably 40 that weren't even a violation anymore.
They were, Commissioner Morgan, how many of those are really truly relevant? You know, from 2004, you go out and then the place is gone.
Well, that's exactly what we're determining with these ones that
drive by.
That we've called the, sometimes it's like the third owner, removed. And we're like, well, there's a manufactured home there. They're like, there's no manufactured home here. And Google Earth it. Yeah, it's gone. Whatever the violation was is gone, you know. So we have managed to close 48 of those. The only reason we haven't closed the others is I just have not got to them yet, though we're just plugging away. So,
okay.
So you are, though, I like that code enforcement is giving things to building inspectors because there's no way the two code enforcement employees can get this all done.
Right.
It's not physically possible for them to go inspect and take all the stuff in that process. So I would encourage more of that. If we got a report on this address, you're going out in that area, will you check it as you go by? Mm-hmm. You know, if they're using the inspectors to help with the code enforcement such side of it, I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So good job.
Thank you. And one other point I wanted to make was I do have a meeting with our fire code officials throughout the county. Haven't got the exact date yet, but I'm requesting them that they keep us in the loop on these fires and issues that are going on. One thing is we've had house fires, and the building safety side knows nothing about it, and people are still living in these structures that should be worked on. Also, I want to provide assistance, if we can assist people in the loss of their home or in the damage to their home, by getting them free inspections, getting them permits that they need and things like that. Also on the land use side, if suddenly they can't live in their home, what can we do temporarily where they can live on the property and be able to take care of their property and their animals and everything else? And on the other end of that, we wind up with a lot of fires that are illegal installations of electrical and mechanical and these hemp fires. So we're going to have a little powwow and talk about how we can be better informed and work with the fire code guys and see make sure we're all on the same page.
Do you need contacts for the fire districts or in
no,
the
got,
local?
No, got them all. And,
okay.
Yeah, the deputy state fire marshal. Mike Shaw and Illinois Valley and all these. So, just trying to get better communication between departments.
Cool.
And that is what I've got for you today.
I wanted to ask you about the cannabis compliance certificate. How's your response been?
Well, out of the 1,800 or so that need to come in and see us, we have about 40.
Right.
So the conversation and those that have come, you know, we're making it easy on them. And I actually gave them all about a 90-day delay because they're all in harvest, and it was very difficult to try to get it scheduled. So this week I'm sending a letter out and say, okay, let's get this back on the road and get this done.
A single deadline, or is it a deadline for each property?
It's a single deadline in February, but this is something I was going to bring back to the board. I think we need to be open to those that
gracious.
just haven't got in to get it done. I'd hate to I'd hate for those that are fully compliant with OLCC or OMMP to be like, nope, yeah, you missed the deadline. For
well, and this first time around compliance, when we're trying to enforce a new policy in this case, that I think we should allow grace,
yeah,
as opposed to a stick.
Right.
Because we want them to be successful. We're not trying to put someone out of business.
Right. And we've done a lot of outreach and trying to get the word out there. And OMMP, the Oregon Health Authority, is the hardest one. They wouldn't even put a link on their website for us to say, hey, by the way, you need...
How many of the OMMP growers came back as OMMP growers now that they can do hemp? Why not just buy the $1,500 permit per site with the state? Mm-hmm. Say you're growing hemp, then just grow whatever you want on it. Because nobody can tell from the road. Nobody's going to inspect the hemp side of it. And if they don't apply for an OMMP license, big deal. The OMMP, at least they have to have cards and all the other stuff and tier this and tier that, as complicated as it can get.
Right.
But they say, why should I do any of that? I'll pay $1,500. I'm a hemp grower and I harvest and I send it away.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Like you say, there's 15% loss, 20% loss. What do I care if I get caught at the border with THC in it? I've already got my money.
Mm-hmm.
So they throw it out and I get my money and no big deal. I'm gone anyway. So how many of those actual OMMP growers came back as OMMP growers rather than just say, I'm hemp now? Because that's what I'm being told. I'm being told they won't give us
that information.
There aren't hardly any actual, quote-unquote, medical grows anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to be a medical grow when you can be a hemp farmer.
Well, everything is hidden under the HIPAA rules, and it, mm-hmm, you know, even when it's not a HIPAA thing, it's, oh yeah, HIPAA, we can't give you any of that. The thing that bothered me the most was that they wouldn't even consider allowing just a link on their website. I reached out to them to say, your clients and our citizens need to know this information. If they're not getting the information, we need a means by which we can give them the application and get them in the loop. And I said, if we give you our application, are you willing to share that with them?
Nope.
Well, can you, you know, go to your website and put a link to Josephine County and so they can get that information? Nope.
Mm.
Actually, they didn't even respond to me when I requested that. So,
Should we create a press release through JPR?
It would be great if we
and
could.
Maybe get the radio and Illinois Valley newspaper and the radio station out there and the Grants Pass Courier and all those to do a little announcement. Hey, this is a deal.
Yeah, especially non-conforming use for residential property, because if they miss the deadline, February
20th. I heard that was the bulk of
that's
completed
done.
Applications, though.
Yeah.
I think that organization was quick to get theirs in,
right?
Because they don't want to lose that bookmark.
Right.
So I heard there was
and
a good chunk.
That's one that there's probably not going to be any grace to it unless there have been a couple that have been held up by OLCC, and I've researched that, and it's true. It was OLCC's issue and not the applicant themselves, and so I feel like, you know, it's only fair to allow them to
absolutely open the window up a little bit wider. As long as they want to step up to the window,
mm-hmm,
I'm okay. And just say, okay, at the end of February, you're done. You didn't get here in time or whatever.
Right.
If they're making a reasonable attempt to get in there and do it legally, I don't see any reason in putting a time constraint punishment thing or make sure they get a 30-day extension
right.
As long as they're trying, I'm okay with that. And those are
I believe.
Well, I put all my stuff in, and they never got to me. Well,
right.
You know, I don't want them to lose their licensing because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was curious because that's what I'm hearing out there. So I don't care about medical anymore. It's too much paperwork involved in it. I'm a hemp grower.
Right, I'm a hemp.
I've got my hemp permit.
Well,
right,
you
here.
Know, for some reason, no one was growing hemp 2 years ago, but suddenly everybody's a hemp grower. So,
well, it's because they allowed hemp to be packaged over state lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And, you won't let me send my marijuana, but they'll let me sell hemp. I'm good. I'm a hemp grower. You can't tell the difference. And you know what?
No.
I don't care if you do tell the difference because I'm in that 15% loss. For the one or two shipments you caught coming out of my grow, there was 50 run through. So
yep.
Why do I care?
Right.
Yep.
And you and I have Mark have had some discussions about adding hemp to a compliance certificate program, like for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Since we kind of tackled the one this year for compliance, does that still make sense to you? Are we going to move that program forward? Or
I think it makes sense. I think the part of the intent was to have good neighbors and such also mm-hmm. with that, and I think. People were seeing some progress with the marijuana grows, and then all of a sudden, boom, you see
hemp.
All your neighbors are growing hemp now, right up against your fence line.
Completely surrounded.
I think it would be good to have some control over that to make sure they're meeting their setbacks for agriculture and using the buildings properly and making sure, places are safe and not becoming a garage becoming a drying facility
right.
next door to, I expect there to be more fires. I really have concerns about loss of life at some point.
Going back to something Commissioner Morgan's always pushed, and that's like a business license, a commercial endeavor.
Mm-hmm. On residential,
On residential, it's still... It's a commercial endeavor, but yet there's no licensing or anything involved with it. But is there an opportunity, that's a bad word for it, for all commercial endeavors to have a business license in Josephine County?
Whether you're growing strawberries or hemp?
Strawberries, corn, or anything else.
By ordinance, sure. I don't think there's anything there for a business license.
No.
Not singling out any particular commodity, but...
Right.
Yeah. Well, my thing was it goes back to the land use. Mm-hmm. Because then it keeps it clean of that it's not about an industry, it's about land use zoning. If it's residential and you have business... Because I've also heard complaints about a construction company next door to a house. And the large equipment and the... I've heard complaints about trucks and different stuff. So depending on what the business is in that... Are they collecting their fluids off of those vehicles they're working on? Are they collecting, because this is their mm-hmm. water off of their well? So just looking at the impacts of business and residential zoning for the sake of primary purpose is living. Is right. this business impact that? We're not saying you can't do the business, but we have to mitigate it. Mm-hmm. What are the things you have to do to make sure that, so we're not trying to prohibit the business happening at the homes, just wanting to make sure it's
safe.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you running a machine at 2 a.m. without any filters?
Well, we went through that rock plant thing out there in Cave Junction right next to residential. But it was on an industrial application, so it really wasn't anything you could do about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
They put up sound berms and all kinds of stuff, right. But there's two neighbors out there that I think they're still mad.
One of the
but there isn't really anything we do about it.
One of the big complaints we get is these large diesel generators running in residential properties,
right.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So,
And possibly pumping out of a residential well illegally or a creek.
Oh, we have
there's
a whole
plenty
list
of concerns. Yeah.
And there's different things that can happen on farmland. Mm-hmm. So you'll have the burners or the cannons that go off for the different animals and all this kind of stuff that's allowable on ag property.
Right.
But because Josephine County is allowed ag on any rural, now you have those having on rural residential. Mm-hmm. So what is it like to live in rural residential Josephine County? Mm-hmm.
Isn't there something in our code, though, that said you can have, you can have an agricultural endeavor, but it can't adversely affect your residential neighbors.
There is language, yes. There is mm-hmm. definitely.
So I'm
but
talking
do we
out.
Look at it? And how
and this is
it
where,
enforce it, yeah.
So in that language is where I'm saying that, if you want to grow hemp on the residential property, you can, but you still have to meet the minimum setbacks required by the code.
Right.
So 30-foot front, 10 on the side, you can't just go right up against... but noise and impacts on neighbors is in that language also.
Because the smell part, I went to one out here on Leonard Road the other day and talked to a group of neighbors, and they were just furious. Mm-hmm. And there ain't nothing we can do about it.
Well, I know the property, and there's big issues at that property, and it's actually coming back to you guys. through appeals.
It's coming around.
It'll come around to you. Yes.
Okay, well, we don't want to violate our quasi-judicial.
We're just anxiously await.
But yes. I appreciate you asking, because before, when I asked about looking at it purely in a land zone or a rural residential picture, I was told, well, all we have is home occupation. And if they're not actually occupying the home with the business, it's just on the property, it's not home occupation. And it got down into semantics to me versus looking at the land use of you have rural residential property and you have a commercial endeavor. What's commercial endeavor? Anything that's traded or
sold. The language didn't match the intent.
And I had pushed and asked, you know, so that we're consistent, that all businesses are looked at the same in rural residential. Okay, I buy eggs from somebody who lives in rural residential on a small property and they have a few chickens. Is that impacting the neighborhood? No. And should they have to? I mean, there should be tiers.
Is that a finance function, the business license?
Cage-free chicken?
That's not a community
function. We don't have one at all.
Function. I know, but I'm saying, if it was to fall somewhere, where does it fall?
Well, with city jurisdictions, I think it's just a finance thing.
That's what I
read. You know,
so it you got the other end of it. It's just a business.
Right. You got the other end of it is building safety. So if you take a rural residential garage, you decide you want to have your hemp drying business in that garage, that becomes a commercial structure.
Right.
And is mandated and to have
issue.
ADA, you know, requirements and the whole thing across the board.
Sure.
So,
okay.
Yeah. You're back now.
Well, and I just want to add that my feedback on community development has been really positive. There's people that have noticed a change since you became director, that the overall counter attitude has improved, that people are sensing that it's not a gotcha moment, but a let's get you a win out of this. Let's get you in compliance out of it. So I really appreciate that kind of feedback coming from our community.
Thank you.
Nice job.
I like it that you had the ability when you were upon it as an inspector and so on and so forth, you had the ability to make people do anything you want. But it's, I don't like the thing, I'm going to make you do that because I can, and this says I can, when it's really obvious to everybody in the room that it wasn't needed.
Right.
No. That's not like that.
I welcome you exploring options for us.
Okay.
Yeah. Might start that discussion with Arthur about business licenses, or even Wally. See, where's that going to land? And you might be able to get it off your plate.
Well, I still, it'd be curious to see how the process was. And is it that any business in the county has to have a license? Well, why? What are we generating? What's the regulation? What's the enforcement?
Because we already do restaurants, obviously. But are there other businesses?
But that's state licensing reason. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was a land use that we do allow ag, but for rural residential primary function living, how does business impact that? And we want people to have the freedom on their land to have a business and to make a living. We also want their neighbor to have the freedom to be able to live in their house peacefully.
Sure.
And so what's that balance? But it also means you're not going after an industry. And laws change and go. So if the consistency is that it's land use, rural residential with a business impact, then it's not about any industry. And whether they change the name of the industry, you still have to look at the land use.
Right. Agreed.
So it's greater vision.
Okay. Anything else for community development?
Not from my end.
I can say that not too long ago, we had asked finance for a marijuana revenue to look at the whole picture. I don't feel we got a whole picture. I think we got one avenue, which was not the mental health, because the mental health, he said, wasn't broken out. So I want to make sure that we have the full picture of what marijuana taxes are funding what. We don't have a lot, and
there's three or four streams.
Correct. So we want to make sure, because I heard you say that you want to bring back, we absolutely need the help with code enforcement. The
public needs. Arthur had told me that there was dollars there that we could do that.
I just want to make sure that
the extent of
didn't cut you a check yet.
That we look the bigger picture so that we can make sure that we are because let me put it this way. there was some funding streams that we knew we had a one-time funding and then ongoing funding. Mm-hmm. And we started some positions, and then they were going to be adjusting after the first or second year. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that those weren't committed in the second year.
I see. Okay.
But I think it is... I really like how you're not just throwing code enforcement at your one division. It is a bigger picture that's affecting a lot. I appreciate the sheriff stepping up the way they are and helping that process. Public health has come along with that
right.
dual
mm-hmm.
position. And I know that one of the things we are not doing is the citation process. My concern was always that in our county, we have one of the lowest compliance with citations and fees. So we have lots of tickets where someone's given a fee. And we have the lowest collection rate in the state. So our debt to collection ratio is off. So I didn't see adding to that is going to get a solution. Because I think you're getting there with the letters. Mm-hmm. By sending the letter and saying, can you get in compliance? People are that want to.
Right.
And if they're not, then you have to go through the court system of the, you know, unless we had a system of a hearings officer or something like that. But those are all those things that got shot down in those ordinances.
Right.
6 years ago, 8 years ago. And, I just don't think we, and the citation piece of it just prolongs that process. It adds a piece, but if there's not compliance, then you still have to do that whole piece.
Right.
So I really appreciate you looking outside the box. If there are still further recommendations of how we can make the system work better, please let us know.
Will do. All right.
All right. Anything else, folks?
No,
Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
Just before the intermission, I wanted just, while Mark is here, we kind of had the crossover just a real
Do
quick.
Do you want to?
Yeah, because I've got it on mine. He kind of sort of had it on his.
Are you going to be unrolling something?
No, I'm not.
Darn,
that's
that
later.
Was fun.
Right. So both our offices have seen some increasing questions, difficulties wrangling around with the, I've already forgotten now the official term, accessory living space. We don't have a good way to handle that within the current department policy for our driveways and all. So we've got a meeting scheduled to talk about that, as well as situations like the Pickett Creek, where we end up with 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 residences on one shared driveway. So I don't know if you guys have been getting pinged on that yet, but we're both aware of it. We've got a meeting that's scheduled to try and figure out what are some ways to get forward. I'm not going to lie, it's going to be sticky just because there's not a good model.
So this is specific to the access permit required by Public Works for the detached living space,
right.
which is added expense to our applicants, but seems to be a necessity.
Kind of an unforeseen
problem
that came up. Didn't exist 15 years ago.
Right.
I'll just use Pickett Creek as an example because I went out there. This is one of those, we made it happen because we have the ability to make it happen. There was a driveway out, but there's 10 houses on that? Probably 8 to 10 on
nine
that.
Nine that made it to 10?
It's up there. It's more than 5, and our code says 5. Anything over 5, you're going to do an approach. That particular driveway has been in use for 25, 30 years off of Pickett Creek. And because the last house on this, the last person wanted to do it, we went out there and made them spend $3,000 on a driveway approach because we can make them do that according to the thing. However, did it improve anything? If they hadn't have put the driveway approach, would it have hurt anything? Would it have done any harm? No, it wouldn't have done any harm. Made absolutely no difference, no sense whatsoever. It's the only house on Pickett Creek that has a paved driveway approach. Out of all the houses, except for one, where the guy paved his entire driveway up to his house. The rest of them are all dirt. And we made that. It's not a through street. Doesn't go anywhere. And it's just a dozen or two dozen houses that are on Pickett Creek. But we made them do that because we can make them do that, not because they really needed to do that. Well, I think we need to be recognize the fact that that was $3,000. That's all the appliances in that lady's kitchen. Now she's got to go figure out where to do it. And she was pretty darn upset about it. And I, honest to goodness, went out and looked at it. I drove out there. But I mean, if, you know, when you buy the permit, I think we need to have the latitude to go out there and say, you know what? I see nothing wrong with the approach that's been working for 25 years. I'm not going to make you improve it because I don't know if you're going to improve it or not.
Right, and, at least, we got to tell them then at the front end of development that's part of it and not let it be a surprise at the end. Oh, by the way, you got
to
do that.
It is noted, and I guess the flip side to Commissioner DeYoung's, and there's no good answer, is if that was somebody coming in to plat a five-lot subdivision, they would have to put in a limited residential road, full width. So
correct.
At some point, you have enough houses up that road. It might be a driveway, but it's acting as a road. So we have a responsibility as the road agency to say how much width, what kind of surface to get folks off of that road, dead end or not. And, yeah, there's perfect world we'd say, hey, all 10 of you guys up here, everybody kick in $300. Let's make this how it should be.
But
there's no way to do that. So,
but yeah. That's what I mean. It's just this particular one, and I would like us to have the latitude to say no, I don't think that's needed, or something of that sort. Because it just didn't make any sense to me. I don't have an answer.
Right,
and you know, y'all got the books and you got the papers and everything else, and we can. But to her, it's $3,000, and when it gets to the $3,000 range, then she's going to skip right over you, and she's going to come to me, and then I got to go out and look at it. And if I'm not happy about it, I'm going to tell you about it.
And I think there's some level of who pays the maintenance, who does the follow-up. She now pays for that road access for $3,000, and the other nine are now going to use portion of it and wear and tear on her expense. So if there isn't a way to say this is everybody who has access,
well, we maintain it once it's in, and it's ours. That's part of the reason why they bring it to code.
We own the edge of the right-of-way,
absolutely.
Oh, all right.
So, there's no good answer. Had we not done it and there was somebody couldn't get off the road quick enough and got rented there, they'd say, geez, who permitted that 10th house on this narrow driveway? That's the flip side. It probably would never happen, but they'd be right back in your office then again saying, geez, my son got rented because he couldn't get the heck off the road fast enough. So, yeah, some kind of proportionality where we could maybe say, hey, look, we think you got $3,000 of improvements, but all these other folks are here. You put in $600, Public Works will pay the other $2,400 and get this thing done. I don't know what that number is, but we can work on some kind of a sliding scale to come up with a more proportional allocation.
Yeah, we're gonna meet and have that conversation as far as detached living spaces. And you know, we don't want people turning around and leaving our office when they want to do a detached living space.
When you get that done, then we'll start giving your. We're not going to do any inspections until this is resolved. So she says we just schedule it. Had Knife River or whoever it was went out there and paved the driveway approach, and it's for her driveway and the one next door to it. Made them do both of them. She did it.
No offense on Piggott Creek. There's no amount of traffic that should be flying through there on that road that anybody could get into a driveway, even coming to a complete stop with a turn signal on, that they would say there's not the traffic count on that road to justify
the dead end. It's the right fork of it.
And I guess for me, we want the additional dwelling units. We want the flexibility for people to be able to. We have a housing crisis. We want to do that. Yes, we do have to be safe. I absolutely hear you, Rob, that we have to have the safety there. I also think that we have to have a level of common sense that does not we have to have a common sense approach to not prohibitive work. And the accessory dwellings shouldn't be adding, I don't know,
We were going to discuss the size of the dwelling, traffic. You know, is it a studio? Is it one bedroom, two bedroom? You know, how much more traffic would that bring onto the property? Anyway, this is just a discussion we're going to get together and have and see. You know,
we get into all of that. Then you talk to the guy out there on Leonard Road who says the driveway next door to mine is just constant, 24/7. Going back and forth to that dope room, you don't do anything about that. Nobody does anything about that, but yet you have an auxiliary dwelling unit next to your house. You go, oh, what's that going to do for trips? That's almost, it almost borders on the system development charges for a drive-in restaurant. Well, they're causing so many more trips a day, but how many people go by there and go into the drive-thru restaurant on their way home? Their home doesn't get it, but they do. They got to pay the whole nickel, and we're on one thing. We're picking and choosing what people want to do on their own property, and then when it comes time, when next door they complain about the guy that's doing all of this complete violation for what you just made him do, and what you're concerned and leaning on him about, and the guy next door is just coming and going. While I was out looking at this one particular part on Leonard Road, They have a gate next door, and so the people have to stop there and get permission from the king, the guy that owns the key, and he pushes the button and the gate comes open. While I was there, there was 3 truckloads of people went in there. While I was there, and I wasn't there 15 minutes. And I said, does this go on all day long? She goes, yes, and all night long. And we don't do anything about that because that's ag or whatever. And I think we're you know, I don't know the answer. Yes. But I do want us to look into something that's a little, I'm sorry, Darren. I want us to look into something that's a little more fair across the board. Because this lady was just hot enough to she was really mad. And I really, honest to goodness, when I went out there, I couldn't say, but ma'am, look at what you're doing to the edge of the road. Or ma'am, look what you're doing here. Or, you know, you're this or you're that. And she goes, yeah, I haven't even moved in yet. And I've got to spend $3,000 on this driveway approach. And it's pretty good size what they made her put in. Mm-hmm. $3,000. Mm-hmm. I was wondering how much it was in the right-of-way. I didn't get a tape measure out and measure over to see how much improvement she did to our right-of-way. So I didn't
do
that. But that's the idea.
So what are you guys recommending?
We're getting an interdepartmental meeting. Yeah. We've, I don't know that it's calendared yet this week, though, for Mark's folks and our folks to sit down and take a look at what would make sense, and then how do we write a new policy that gives our inspectors in the field, his folks in the field, more discretion to say, yeah, you know what, that doesn't quite feel right.
Discretion.
That sounds great.
Yeah, because as soon as you come with a hard and fast number that says, hey, more than 8 houses, sure as heck, the next person that comes in is going to be the 9. You left me on the door. You know, we can't win with that. So, yeah, it's going to have to be a lot grayer. And we'll give the folks in the field discretion.
Or, I mean, is there something that says that it goes back to all of them? That if enough development on the road rises to this level, then all properties on the thing are equally responsible for the drive. Is there something in the code that we could do that way? Or what would be the right thing?
I know, and whether they share an easement or they're just gentleman's agreement, there's a lot of loopholes.
Well, and then you target that one person and want to build their house on there, and now everybody has to pay for their
house. Everybody's mad at them, right?
So all of a sudden, if you hadn't have built here, I wouldn't have been having to pay this. And
what we really need is 4 driveways in parallel.
When I was younger, I lived on Oakview Drive over here crossing the park, which is not a city street. It was in the county at that time, and our little lane down there, Oakview Drive, was just a mess. And I said, well, I'm going to get the asphalt, the cold patch, I'm going to fix it. Everybody, oh, well, Saturday's a day. And boy, Saturday morning, as I was driving out, I looked behind me, and almost every neighbor was going somewhere. And it was me and old Don Chilcote, the old man Chilcote, 82 years old, him and I filled all those holes while everybody else went to the garage sales. Yeah. So it doesn't work. The neighborhood thing doesn't work. My experience of that.
We got it. Working up a calendar and get that on.
Received the email of dates, and so I'll pick a date.
Okay.
And we'll.
Okay. I appreciate you two working together on that.
Sure.
Okay.
Rob, I apologize. Can you give me just a break?
Oh, yeah, it's fine. I just wanted to get a little Marcus here. Yep.
Scheduled, so we can keep going.
Thank you all.
I know that we need to give you not rushed time, so I'm trying to bump my 11 o'clock. I don't know if anybody else has any.
Dan, ask us at dinner. I got this thing.
My computer was. As soon as I decided to read my email, say, oh, we're going to restart. So that's a half an hour process to restart his computer. So I did it. I signed for it to be scheduled to do at 8:15 in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, you're good until 1 o'clock. Then. You're good until 1 o'clock. Then. That's your next appointment.
One. And who is it? Jim Brumback?
Fish Hatchery.
Fish Hatchery.
Ramsey Gecko.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Hecker, we're just kind of letting that one lie, right?
I mean, what's up?
The one on Summer Lane, I just kind of said, if you guys want us to help kind of negotiate or mediate something, we can, but all the drainage issues are down at the end of that. It's kind of a civil matter at this point, so they know the offer's out there.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to help them work up, you know, we could take some shots and see if we can get it through that guy's parcel of the river, because he sounded like he was fine getting an easement through there. So
we'll find out.
We'll wait to hear. Yeah.
I think it's theirs. rather than, like you said at one time, you know, rather spend a bunch of money on attorneys, why don't you spend the money on back all the time?
Wouldn't take anything.
And fix it, because you're not going to fix it yelling at each other.
Looks like it'd be pretty simple to me, yeah.
Did you have one more?
I made five, and that'll give her six fish, right?
Okay, sounds good. All righty.
Have a handoff.
Go ahead, sir.
All right. Similar format to last time, that seemed to work well for everybody, kind of hitting on the high points. I'm guessing you don't really care how many customers came in, how many phone calls, this and that. So I tried to focus on bigger picture projects that we have going. In general, what I've done is things that are completely done, gone, buried, taken them off the list, ones that have updates, left them on with the appropriate updates. So I'll just start at the top, and if you want further explanation, let me know. We can slow down and take a deeper dive. Finch Road Bridge, we talked about this one last time. This is going to be some minor maintenance work over the winter. I say minor, probably $20,000. We will be going out to contract with that in the next month or two or three and leaving it fairly open-ended, so the presumptive low bidder will have quite a few months to get that work done. Some joint work and effectively low maintenance. Sand Creek Bridge is done, finally, as you all know. And as I've been saying all along, it was completed with no local dollars spent. I don't want to get too deep into the numbers because it gets gross really quick, but I just wanted to give you kind of a sense of how this one shook out. And this was the first project we've done with exchange dollars. So instead of the old format where we would pay the 10.27% match and run from there, this one, ODOT up front, just says we will give you 94 cents on the dollar, cut all strings, but you guys have to manage this project. So that's what we opted to do. So that $1,557,000 at the top there, that represents 94% of whatever the previous number was, $1,007,000, I believe. And so what I really want you to focus on is that bottom left-hand corner. You can kind of see the two biggies. There's DEA, that's for the design, construction, on the engineering end, Timber Mountain for the actual construction itself. We've got some additional easement work that came in and some smaller payments for items with adds to the paper and things like that. And then the labor, that's effectively our cost to manage that. So that's our inspectors, our review time, our engineering, admin, all that. So it gives you a sense of what we had in-house. So again, all that money is reimbursed through that $1,005,000. So that's how we end up with no out-of-pocket costs, literally. So we'd actually backfilled our time. So our guess is we're leaving about $50,000 on the table. It is what it is. You know, and we've got a couple change orders from Timber Mountain still to come through, but fairly close. And the other big point that came away from this was we had Timber Mountain buy those two message boards to the tune of $30,000, which we take possession of at the completion of the project. So we effectively tooled up by $30,000 by doing this project with two of those nice signboards like you see out here for the
like orange on a trailer.
The parade ones and all that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those will be, you know, up for grabs if people need to use those, but that's a nice add to kind of our signing and striping program. So just wanted to show you that. I suspect future projects we're going to keep going that exchange route. It looks to make sense to me.
Sure.
Because otherwise we're paying 10.27 on that, so it's, you know, $150,000 out of our pockets and don't have the signboard. So we kind of came out $180,000 to the good. Next one down is the Kirby landfill cap. That one is just a holding pattern, waiting for it to rain, basically, the last sentence there. So all the biosolids and soil are in place. We almost pulled the trigger 2 weeks ago, but said, it feels early, and I'm glad we didn't because we'd be trying to water it right now. We're hoping for the best. So as soon as we get those first official soaking rains, we will reseed that.
Is that a completely closed facility, or is there a transfer station?
Transfer station's out there, but the landfill is not.
Right, the landfill's gone, but it's full transfer, just like the other Grants Pass.
We just go out there every year, two or three, regrade it, and flatten it.
Do we have monitoring wells out there at all?
There are monitoring wells as well as piezometers. They can basically tell what the water level is in that cap to see where it's going, but it's fairly low bore. They're not seeing any leachate or anything else. It's almost all.
We don't have any houses really close to that. That was
no.
Myrtle landfill ended up with fouling wells all the way around. That's why they sent water up.
As did Mollison, same thing. Yep. So you know, Kirby's fairly low bore, and I think once we get that area reseeded, hopefully DEQ will say let's call it good there for a while because
there will be an eventual no more action required.
Someday, but we hope. Right. Yeah, hopefully they don't look and say, "Hey, that looks really good. Let's try another acre of reseeding in the future." But if they do, we don't have a whole lot of pushback. Okay. The next one, the solid waste franchise agreement. So over about the last 9 months, us in the city, primarily me on our end, Jason on that end, have been working on the franchise and they actually hired an attorney to get these things updated. There aren't any actual changes to the rates, anything else, but those agreements are going on 15 years old, and they've got so many amendments now. The franchise is this thick, and it should be this thick. So working with the attorney, she's kind of got that stripped down now to a cleaner, better franchise.
We're hoping to see that draft from her in the next month or two, and the process would be for the board to approve both, city council to approve both.
I should tell you that I polled the commissioners on the Washington, D.C. trip in August when I was out there
right?
about franchise with that third-party hauler thing. None of them have that condition.
Not an issue anywhere but here.
Nope. Yeah. And on top of that, they said...
They allow open-ended third-party hauling business.
Absolutely. If they're paying when they get it there,
yeah. right.
they don't
right.
care. Because right. either way, it's the same company receiving it mm-hmm. as would have been hauling it. So therefore, the hauling fees encompass, and they're like... They thought it was absolutely ridiculous that we're even dealing with it. I should let you know I had a contractor reach out to me 2 days ago with an issue, and I'm going to be bringing it to them.
Yeah.
And it was somebody who is currently licensed to haul their own because they're construction, and most of it's their own refuge
yeah.
from their stuff.
Yeah.
And they had to go through the process, and all their complaints, availability, price, cost, all this other kind of stuff, it was a very negative experience.
Hmm.
And I just think I'm going to work with them because I think we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
But when I reach out to the other commissioners, I think the public sentiment would be the same.
Yeah, they go, what's the problem?
The thing the public cares about is people are dumping in the hills.
Forest, yeah.
Right.
And that is what's getting undermined out there for people hauling the other ones that aren't going through the licensing. So you have some that are trying to do it legitimately.
Sure.
I would strongly encourage us to eliminate that process and say, for third party, incorporate a fee structure in the receiving end.
Right, right.
And
we could have SOS or Republic model that to say, what would you have to raise the rates of transfer station by to offset that lost cost? I mean, they can come up with that number.
You can't tell me that they can dispatch a truck and one of them big dumpsters and everything in any kind of reasonable time frame, because construction, as you know, you do construction, all of a sudden, hey, I'm going to tear this place down, or I'm going to tear out all these walls.
Yeah.
Sorry, but we've all of them were assigned to the fire, and we can't get to you for 3 months. Sorry, that ain't going to fly. So I think that whole thing, and I appreciate you asking about that while you're back there of other commissioners, because it seemed awful counterproductive. The whole process seemed
counterproductive. The goal is to get the refuge into the landfill.
Exactly. Get it to where it needs to be rather than up off of Forest Service Road 2382.
Right.
So I think there needs to be allowance of a process. I can say that this contractor, they ordered a dumpster. The issues with delivery were an issue, the issue with when to pick up, all this other kind of stuff. But on top of it, they made... This was a contractor that a family in California bought a house, hired a contractor to remodel the house so they can move up. Family isn't even moved here yet. They required the family in California to sign off paperwork that the contractor had a right to have a dumpster hauled there. I'm sorry. I watched a house where the person working on the house ordered cable for the month.
All right.
And nobody looked for residency requirement or anything else like that. It's just kind of one of those things that I think we're making it harder than it has to be. The goal is the trash is going where it needs to go and not dumped on illegal methodology. And so let's come up with a system that encourages legal trash getting to where it needs to go and encouraging the business to get it there. And
with the least barriers possible.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
All good points. And I have... I'm not taking up for the franchise hours. I try to play Switzerland on this thing because I'm on one hand have to try to honor the franchise they've got, but also looking for the ratepayers. And yeah, the reality is there is a cost to the ratepayers into doing that. Is my guess, but how much is it? I don't know. It may not be that much. And yeah, you don't want to quadruple the rates of the transfer station because then that stuff may end up out in the woods more likely. But
I would say that arriving at a transfer station should be the cost of receiving those items, regardless of who's bringing it. I just think there's got to be an easier way. And when I reached out to other commissioners to ask, not one of them said they had a system like that.
When we're protecting one thing, we're punishing everybody else at the same time.
And I don't think we're going to see the rate haul. I don't think you're going to see... Well, right now I have the option at my house to haul my own trash
right.
to the landfill, and I pay that fee.
Right.
It does it mean the rest of the system is paying more because I'm not getting trash service at my house? It's kind of one of those things that this is a specific niche that our goal is trash gets to where it needs to be, and that fee of receiving that stuff should cover that cost,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, mm-hmm. solely. And I don't know the methodology, but I would like that to be adjusted in the franchise.
I would think that they could relatively easily come up with an estimate of how many dumpster rentals they would lose during the course of the year, and that's the number that they would then have to offset. Because that's the way that they're arguing about there.
I don't think they should have that argument at all. I think it should purely be what's the cost of their arriving at their place, and that's the fee to cover it.
Well, if we don't do that, then there's a point in the future where if you said that 20% of their customers started hauling their own trash, the franchisees have sunk cost in all their equipment, and they could say, we have a new depreciation schedule. We are not as cost effective, so how do we make that back up? We raise everybody's rates.
I had this contractor that's not a third-party hauler. They're mm-hmm. a contractor doing work. Mm-hmm. They usually get to haul their own stuff, but in the circumstance, had to get a dumpster, mm-hmm. called to get bids, and they said, okay, we'll need this size. So they said, okay, thanks. They put it in the bid. They move ahead. They mm-hmm. call and say, I need that one. Oh, we don't have that one available, and we couldn't tell you when it will be available.
This is from SOS.
Yes. We have no idea of when
right.
that'll be available.
Right.
So I bring it up to the owner who says, well, I just spent this much money in new dumpsters.
Right.
Well, then why can't you tell that person when one is going to be available?
Right.
Because this person's next experience is they went up to the next size and spent $400 more.
Mm-hmm.
That's now out of their own pocket because it's not
what
they bid.
Can't recover from you because he's already put it
yep.
in the bid.
And then they said, well, when are you going to have us pick? There was the pickup, and they said, they gave them less than a business day. We'll deliver sometime on Friday, and we're going to pick up sometime on Monday, and couldn't guarantee the times
right.
of anything.
So
and
then
they said, that won't
really
work
like
for
that.
My workers. They charge them a $45 cancellation fee. I'm sorry. I don't think that's good business practice.
If... Yeah, I
now
that'd be a discussion for Trent because
I
mean, all their phone calls are all their phone calls
this
are recorded.
This was an
in person yeah.
conversation, not recorded telephone
yeah.
call.
Yeah.
The person was in their shop asking questions, but here's the thing: if they spent this much money and they say that they had to recoup their cost of inventory, this one's got a deadline to turn it in, but they're not telling the people renting when how long it'll be before it's available. There's a disconnect there.
SOS also has language that says they will upsize a dumpster if they don't have the one that's on size. If somebody wants it, I think they've got that written.
They charge them $400 more.
If you want a certain size and they don't have it, I believe they provide the next size up.
They charge them $400 more.
Yeah. And some of them may have to bulk.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that I don't think enough to just say they have to recoup their cost is enough to work it into that fee structure.
I'm just telling you what their argument will be. Because if you suddenly said you're only picking up trash from every other person on the road, that will make the two franchisees less efficient.
But we're talking third party. We're talking not their regular pickup. I get that.
Yeah.
It's like conserving on your power bill at home.
Mm-hmm.
When everybody conserves and their rate their average meter reading is down 12%, guess who they go see for a 12% increase?
Mm-hmm.
Because we all conserve,
right.
They still need $100 a meter to keep Pacific Power
right.
and Light functioning.
That's the
SOS still has a
right.
cost of doing business.
That's the argument I'm making, yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But if part of their business says, we don't have to have all those dumpsters in reserve because we're going to allow third-party haulers to come
oh, sure.
in, we'll recoup it when they bring this stuff in.
They
we're all set.
Yeah, unless
so,
they've got a big profit
so
margin
the
built
language
into the dumpster
to protect
language.
That everybody is now just hiring third-party haulers is simply that under contract to do a work at that business may haul, and this is the fee.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a way to do the language that
mm-hmm.
puts it still on a limit, that
mm-hmm.
it's not somebody just
mm-hmm.
going picking up trash along the way,
mm-hmm.
right.
that they're under contract at that property, just like any other contractor is
right.
that is allowed. The carpet
Nobody's,
guy, the other guy, the cleanup, all fall under the same category of may haul and pay the fee at the place. So
cleaning up property and whatnot, like at your job, your construction site, that's not starting your own garbage business in competition
no.
with the franchise.
No.
I think that's the part I have trouble with.
Okay.
So I think there's still language that can protect that
sure.
it's not everybody, but it allows that business to come because, like I said, when I reached out to other counties, they all thought that it was silly we were even having that required. I mean, literally,
yeah.
the response was, none of us have that issue. And,
okay.
oh, how do I deal with this now? So I'm glad it's timely that
sure.
you brought up the timing.
I'll talk to the two haulers and get because to hear them tell it, that's standard operating procedure. So I'll be curious. Okay. Yep, I will start the discussion.
And our goal, again, is we want the trash hauled to the right location.
Absolutely.
So if it's not prohibitive for those people that are contracted to pick up at that house under construction or under contract to get it there, mm-hmm. we're going to save the community as a whole from not having to clean up the forest, from not having to the illegal dump sites.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
I will make a point. Next, operations quarterly maintenance. I've kind of got our bigger summer projects listed down there. I would say we got to probably 100% plus of the road surfacing work. They actually got done with all those primary ones, the dig outs, blade patch, crack seal, and were able to start in on stuff for next spring that they know is coming up. They already know the chip seal roads for next year, so they actually started on some of that prep work this summer just because they made good time. Chip sealing, got all 30 miles that we had budgeted done. The line striping were probably only about two-thirds of what they hoped for. It was partly because it was an aggressive year and partly because both of our guys that are the best on the guns had a couple of extended absences, and we just don't have a lot of guys that had enough time on those guns. So when in doubt...
Yeah, don't stripe wrong. I've seen some...
Oh, I know it.
Oh, that does it.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing it at night. You know, you see some of that stuff down the freeway. You go,
yep.
Okay,
we biffed one. It was on Facebook in 2 hours. I got pinged. I was up at the gym. I got pinged at like 7 o'clock. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So, yeah, I go out there and... get out the black paint, and we fog seal over and redo it. It happens now and then. It's, yep, unfortunately. So in that case, yes, we send the totes back or keep them somewhere warm, and we'll just pick them up in the spring. Probably got to 100% of our sign replacement. Sign install, we're guessing 80%, kind of a product of two things. Number one was that arts project, which we'll talk about a bit further down. That was the ODOT, put out more chevrons, put out more curve delineators, so that was kind of another big chunk that we typically wouldn't have. We also had, there's some new bridge requirements that we had to put up quite a few additional signs for, too, with new axle designations. Sir?
I don't know how you could have gotten a smaller sign for exit 61, the size of that right
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't the signs for panhandling larger?
If they were bigger than that, we would have to put in new poles or put them higher because ODOT said the visibility issue there at those intersections.
At the intersection. Yeah. Okay. I just have to have an answer for people said, I don't think you could have gotten a smaller sign. And I said, I have no idea why that's that way.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. That was the primary reason. So
that won't satisify him, but I'll just say it.
Go well, it gets Dave off the
hook.
If I put a bigger sign, then it'd be, well, why isn't the sheriff doing anything?
Big R, big B, Rob Brandis.
Yes.
BR549.
I think they'll get that caught up over the winter as the weather turns. Our guys can be in the shop more, getting additional blanks built. The flat program, that thing is in a holding pattern where they're doing locates right now. They're guessing they'll start the first week or two of January. A couple of the last poles that need to be moved are pretty sticky, and PP&L's initial comeback was, well, can you put it in front of the guardrail? No, we cannot.
But leave the pole out in the travel lane?
Well, right in front of the guardrail and the fog lane, it's still not a good spot yet. That'll be your most sheared off pole in the county. The tough part is you get behind it, you're starting to run out of meat as it's going down the hill.
Sure.
So, yeah, we're going to have to do a bit of a dance on that one.
A wowie or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it actually isn't even the pole, it's the guy wire that they're worried about. So I suspect they don't have anywhere to hook the tension without going all the way across the river or something like that.
Yeah, really.
Southwest Active Transportation Summit. This was kind of ironic. I was called and asked to be a presenter at this on the Merlin sidewalk as an example of how to battle through a frequently difficult public process with a good end result. So coming up in November, I think Jenna Stanky wrote me into that one, but it should be good. There's a lot of projects of interest to me, too. So we will go up there and tell them of the good things we did with a show and... everybody can learn from us.
Well, that's good. Thank you for doing that.
Yes. Yeah.
We're already dealing with it in Williams.
Yeah, if it'll save somebody else pain, then...
Did Merlin help us learn something, and now we're addressing Williams different because...
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it should be interesting, and I'm looking forward to doing it.
I would like to ask you about signs before we get done with that.
Sure.
So I know it's coming up again. I just don't want to forget to ask you.
Signs. Okay. Sure. The next one. This is good. FEMA mitigation grant. So... over 2.5 years ago, that same storm that blew out Sand Creek, we put in for some mitigation projects that are called out in our Redwood Drainage Plan. This is about 15 projects that we're going to keep picking off over the years to mitigate a lot of those impacts in the flat area and the Redwood area. So we put in for these, and what FEMA does is you have to do a cost-benefit analysis to say, if you put in a buck, will it save more than a buck on the back end of that? And the modeling itself is difficult to the point where I spent about 6 hours. I threw my hands up and said, "Shine." So we actually contracted with an ex-FEMA employee that runs this software. He got it done for us, put together a long grant, and 2.5 years later, we found out we got it. So that was pretty cool. So this will get us 3 projects done with, you can see there, about an $87,000 grant and about $30,000 of our pocket. These are all projects that we need to do anyway, so we get them done for 25 cents on the dollar.
Does this help us out down there on, like, say, the South River Road where that whole thing floods down there? It's a pond. It's a wetland.
These specific ones will not change South River much, but that the South River we're working on with the road.
We're not going to add to it because this is all upstream from South River.
Yep.
I'm seeing we're going to fix all of this stuff. Is it going to put added burden on South River?
No, it will not. And South River, that's the one on Rogue Ridge we're working on, hopefully getting an extra cross in there too and the easement behind Rogue Ridge.
We really do need to get that stuff to the river because it's a lake out there where it really does things
flat back. As a fritter, and it just, and yeah, more development means more hard surfaces and less, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these numbers still current? Because you're looking at current project at 116, but that was back.
We did this
in 12.
Yeah, it was in 12. I think we're in good shape. The study here accounted for some pretty heavy engineering time and things like that. And these are all going to be fairly straight rips. Upsizing the culvert and the roads. I think we'll be in good shape on those three. The art signage projects, that's the one I mentioned earlier. This was an ODOT grant to basically increase signing and curve riders on county roads. We've done the initial list. It came in at only about $45,000 or $50,000. So we're hoping to say, hey, we'd like to spend the rest of that $254 on we're just going to keep adding roads to that list. We'll do every road that's a arterial collector, whatever, and keep going. So they've initially said, we think that's okay. Now we're kind of arguing over what's the list look like.
We had a gentleman come in, and I've got the sign in my thing that we're a Purple Heart County.
Oh, okay. Sure.
And those signs are available. I think Medford makes them.
Okay.
So, I mean, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, we can.
Do we put those? Can we put those?
Probably right there by the We Support the Veterans on all the county entrances, I guess.
If we can do that, if you could get me an idea how many that is, and we'll have to bring it to the board to see if they want to do it. But
I think it's only 3.
Okay. Entering Josephine County, we're
from Hotel Williams and CJ. I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've got the sign. He brought it in. It was spin off from the fair.
It should work. Usually the JPEG or the files we can exchange pretty easily, so we can import them. We can just burn them out at our place.
Okay. If it's okay with the board to do that.
It's going to be low cost. I don't know. $150 by the time it's traveling back. It won't be much. Yeah. I will take a look at it and let you know.
Okay. Let me know what that shakes out like.
So we make signs in-house?
Mm-hmm.
Have we compared the costs of that to, say, the company in Medford that the region uses?
We have not in a while. The benefit for us is that having it in-house, it's not only something that we can do to backfill if our sign guy has 2 hours to kill at the end of the day, but with all the materials in-house, we can print them on an as-needed basis, too. So we do go out to get things like stop signs that are mass-produced, but if we need a new Highland Avenue sign, it seems it's be easier to just burn it out in-house. It's just a laser cutter that we put the numbers into. It's got all of our roads and signage pre-drilled, and it burns it right out. We just put putting the backing on the metal blank. So it, at this point, doesn't seem like it makes sense.
As you can see, this has got a reflective stuff to it, very high-quality sign, and they can make those right there. They already have the templates and everything for it.
I figure, so, we can just go ahead and order 3 if you want to do that. Yeah,
that's what they look like.
Do you have a contact for it, Dan? Or?
No, but I will.
Okay. Yep. We can order them.
I think Joseph Jackson County Public Works does that. I think, but I'll find out for you.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know who the group is.
They were out at the fair, and I've got his card.
I did hear that some of the signs around the third bridge, but does ODOT notify you when they're putting up signs, taking down signs in your jurisdiction, or is that with every city? So
if it's on their road, they probably wouldn't unless it was something significant like changing a road name. If it was a matter of them putting up an additional curve rider, they probably would not.
I think this was the Thomas Rice Memorial
name
or something like that. It had come down. Somebody had asked me about that, and I didn't know.
I hadn't heard anything.
Okay. I don't think the designation has changed because it just got added a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, keep going.
Okay. Merlin Traffic Study. So we've got a, there's a mini mall of sorts, I'm going to use that for lack of a better term, that's going in there right at the corner on Monument Merlin. It's early in pre-app, but it's going to need a traffic study just because there's a lot going on there. It's in
the, is it the one empty corner?
In, on the northwest corner, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not
where the bank is?
Yep.
There's a bank.
It's early on, yeah, but it's going to be...
Have they fixed the sinkhole?
They're gonna fix the hole.
Yeah, right. I do not know. Do not know. But it's gonna
I'm
create.
Sure it'll come up.
If it comes true, you know, yeah, car wash, mini mart type thing. It'll have a lot of traffic.
It's just an extension to jump off Joe's ponds. The
pool
that used to be
yeah.
there. Now it's a sinkhole.
So we, as that one came across, and we've got a couple of bigger subdivisions coming in on Merlin Road. We took a look and said we need to get some do some traffic engineering on that whole kind of loop. So I didn't make copies, but it's basically the Merlin Monument. Carton intersection there. Larry's got more traffic with the airport, so we're going to have them analyze these five intersections, get some traffic counts, so when we do have new developments come in, at least they've got a baseline to say, hey, here's what we're expecting there, and you know, in the case of this mini mart, they're going to have to do one regardless because that's a lot of cars, but yeah. This may be enough for those smaller developments to say, nope, we got the proof.
Mini mall, not a mini mart.
Mini mart, yeah.
I guess sure I heard
I don't know, it could be busy. You see some of those, and they're cranking them through there pretty fast.
It's our version of an outlet mall.
Right, yeah. Right. It's the Woodburn Outlets, yeah.
2 acres.
Yeah. But this is the kind of thing, yeah, we don't have the horsepower to do it in-house.
Just
so
County Outlet Mall.
We've got a traffic Three engineer stores. Firm in Medford that's going to do those five for us.
Merlin Magical Mall.
The major culvert installations, no change on that one. We're still on track to have three more in the budget for next year. Beacon and Highland, same thing. Those are not a change on those yet, but those are going to be working on design this fall and winter
can
to go out.
Can you remind me, is this enough for us to be able to give that portion to the city?
They have not committed to that, but that's going to be our hope to say, look, can we do sidewalk on one side and call that as close as we're going to get?
And I want to visit with you on the Beacon Drive thing.
Yeah.
You know, in the not too distant yep. future.
And we're trying to get a meeting together with GPID because they want
okay,
to put in
I would like when
proof.
You do that, I'd like to be in the room.
Sure. Sure. I don't think we've got it set yet, but hopefully the next week or so because they're chomping at the bit.
I know and I'm leaning towards their proposal just to get it out of the way when...
We could, yeah, that's their call. I think we'll save them money if they wait, we're not going to tell them we can't. Back page, Lower River Road. The only real change in that, we've now had it for 3 or 4 months, and I don't know if you guys have heard it, but we've heard a lot of good response.
Yes,
everybody's kind of saying,
hey,
it's wide open. A few people say, it doesn't look like a park anymore, but it was overgrown. It had a lot of problems. So fingers crossed. I'm kind of curious to see how the drainage operates this winter, but it's going to be a lot better. But just getting the vegetation knocked back and opened up has helped a ton. So,
I've heard great reports.
We're not there yet, but yeah. And Jerry Marmon said something the other day, and I just said, well, thanks for setting the bar low.
I am curious. The city has their River Road Reserve process. Mm-hmm. Has anybody ever reached out to us on traffic studies or impact of that property on the county roads?
Not traffic specific, no. I mean, it would probably be once land use actually happened or was tentative that it would you start looking at some traffic numbers. My only thought would be that the county or bigger development may have an interest in some drainage easements from top to bottom on that to get from upper to Lower River Road. So, but you know, the city's not going to want to put that restriction on there because it's going to lower the presumed value of selling that thing. But perfect world, you should have drainage easements. I don't know, every third or something on it.
I think we need to get that's good. Forward thinking because we don't want to get into another situation farther on down where we have the whirligigs and you can't get to the river from there.
Or Redwood Avenue where everything gets built up and all of a sudden, whoops, it's so flat, the water's just standing. So
you've got to have those easements in place before that anything changes.
Yep.
And this is an ideal opportunity to do that.
Yeah. So that's as close as it's come, but nothing has gotten to the point of that traffic studies or anything else. Safe routes to school. So a couple weeks ago, I don't know, it was technically in the first quarter, but I'm going to bring it out anyway. So we had an open house out there to Williams to kind of look at our new proposed design on that. And what we are settling on is roundabout. And it was overwhelmingly preferred out there. There wasn't a ton of people. Probably had 15 folks that showed up. But it was good. They liked the idea of keeping the crosswalks. This would still have the signals, as well as the flashers on all three legs there that would basically go on for an hour when school got in, an hour when school got out. a lot of deceleration area because you want to get folks slowed down as they get into this thing. The roundabout itself, kind of a wonky shape. We haven't quite settled on that, but what Neil's trying to do is this is the tough motion. He wants to get it enough to where we're slowing folks down so they can't just bomb that thing straight. So it probably will not be a dead circle, but it's trying to split the difference to get all the legs slowed down enough to make it function correctly.
Neil being our engineer.
Yeah. What we would,
does this take out the site? Which one is the... All right, so there's the market, there's the school.
And this is Takuba over here.
The one that's impacted by the... How does it adjust for the truck parking they were doing in the middle of the triangle?
It would make... Well, we don't want them parking in the middle of this. I mean, they shouldn't be parking in the right-of-way regardless.
Correct.
So we're going to work with them. Todd likes the general concept. We would probably help them get a driveway that's enhanced out here and try to encourage them to have it more of a pull-through for their longer trucks. Yeah. This will be a mountable curb here, so that's kind of the, you know, 3-to-1. Yeah, it goes up to 6 inches still, but bigger trucks can then make the motion. We have to design this for a 53-footer just like
so
it
was.
So
you have to be able to get around this
circle. Yeah, and if you're, I think the tight motion is a truck coming this way deciding to do a U-turn, the trailer drags almost to dead center of the back end, which is okay. It's mountable. You take it slow, but
we're
that's
not going to plant a bunch of stuff.
No,
we're not putting a big welcome to Williams sign.
Right.
In
they,
it.
That was the one thing the folks wanted there. Can we put something in the. No.
That's, welcome that's, to Williams.
Can we plant something here? No. We're not putting dirt. So this would be presumably just, poured in place cement.
You and I touched on it a while back, but I don't know if we even got an answer on it. These are cows, by the way.
Right.
That one of the things that they want to build was talking about a path, you know, that went from say the
store
all the way down to the Grange and whatnot. And I think you were saying that
that was the original grant proposal, actually.
That some of the people that you had talked to these folks and they said, yeah, we'll give an easement along here or whatever, and that you would maybe help, you know, use like a golf cart path or something down through here, a walking multimodal path off the right of way.
Right.
Not at, maybe in the right of way, but off the main thoroughfare.
Yes.
Is that still in the works?
Yep.
I'd like to call Bill and tell him that there's that maybe a plan in the works for that.
Yeah, that was the original
require
plan. They actually
participation by the people out there.
Yeah, they put in that for that as the original grant plan that we didn't know anything about. And they said,
hey,
by the way,
safe route to school.
Yeah, and as we looked at it, it was going to be, $250,000 path because once we take the state money, we've got to redo the fencing, we've got to take out the trees, the base, blah, blah, blah. So my thought was instead to basically say, look, we acknowledge you guys got this. You helped us fix an intersection we were already going to fix in the next 5 years anyway. We will get them the equipment time, if they need the grubbing and clearing to get the stuff out of there, the material for the base. And honestly, they're kind of falling back now to saying maybe just DG to keep this a lot lower bore.
Right.
The maintenance isn't going to change much. And they say that it's fairly stable. It doesn't get soupy in the winter and not even mess with an easement. If they want to go that route to an easement, they can have it. But
you know, Bill
just
was in, and he was quite concerned about that, if there was any way we could couple that in with this thing. And I said, I think we need to fix the roads is what our problem is.
Yeah, I definitely don't want it right away, because then we got to maintain it.
I don't think
it,
they want anything real fancy like the Merlin Sidewalk Project. They just want to have place that's designated for.
And so what I told those folks is I said, yes, we will happily do the survey, the engineer design, and get you material and equipment time. I think they want to help out there, it sounds like, too. So I said, hey, if you guys want to take down the trees and the fence and all that stuff, you figure out a day, you stack it there, we'll come get it out of there. We'll do that absolutely partner on that stuff, but I think the lower bore makes sense to get it done. And in talking around what folks do to get around the wrinkle of, hey, how are you working outside the right of way? Well, we're training on our equipment. We need training time for the operators, and it's connecting to substantial pedestrian points. So that passes the sniff test to say, well, you can't just build that in the middle of nowhere. But then, it would go from here up to Burmar Circle. That's that next cool
set. That street with the store on it?
Yeah.
How come this is missing the same pork chop that's in those? Is that by design or?
These will actually be raised concrete like the middle just to channelize folks. And this one I don't think needed it just because the radius was better.
If you actually come out around here, you're going to need to swing wide with the truck anyway, I think.
If you were
going out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if we're routing them through to do the U-turn to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
School loved it. Brian Tetson there that owns a store loves the idea. They're actually talking about wanting to pay their place at the same time.
What's the fire district say?
They're good with it. They was out of the area Williams influence. And they said their engines would be no problem. The school district's talking about paving the same time. And you do them all at the same time, you get a better number, obviously. The only folks we've heard kind of saying, I don't know, is there's like, I haven't looked, but apparently on Williams, they're saying we're on Williams Facebook. Well, people that are impaired may have trouble negotiating it. I'm sorry, we don't design for drunks. They shouldn't be driving drunk.
And Brian Hunter, I heard from him, Brian wanted to do it all out of coconut shells.
Instead of Well, and I think that if Josephine County was going to have a roundabout, that it's appropriate.
Oh,
I think so.
It's
great.
They're going to love it.
Yes.
It would not have flown in Merlin. They would have said, this feels kind of European or something. Yeah. I don't think we can do it.
No, I think they're more open to that. And they're, once they get used to it, they're going to love it.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's going to be spray painted.
Yeah. If they say
they have artwork on it.
We told them, they said, if you want to do something flat in the middle, you'll have about a 2 or 3 day window, and I'm not opposed to that. If you guys want to put a big solstice or something on it, make it flat. I don't care. Go for it. But that's it.
Sure. Not an artist.
Like a mosaic
Yeah, paint a mural or something. Yeah. Sure. As long as it's flat, you can go to town. I don't care.
Yeah, I think it's very vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good vineyard design. I like them.
Yeah. So cool. All credit to Neil. He had a moment of clarity on it.
I'll Neil, good work on that. That'd be swell. That's the first one in Josephine County.
Yep. Medford just put in another one, or Oda put in another
Williams put that on their travel brochure.
Right.
Come to Williams and maneuver our roundabout. The
first roundabout.
On the roundabout. Williams roundabout.
Jason to do something on that.
You know, we really shouldn't leave that subject without me mentioning, have you ever seen the TomTom version of different speakers for the navigational aids? They have Darth Vader and Yoda talking about roundabout. If you haven't seen that, you got to see it. It is way funny.
Roundabout?
Roundabout. That's what Darth Vader, he mispronounces it the whole time. It is well worth seeing.
The next one there, just some school-related safety projects. So this one's been probably got going near the end of last school year. Fruitdale School, the two yellow boxes, those are going to be the same kind of actuated flashers. So we're going to get them installed there. It's busy enough. It's a county school. It's a county road, but it feels like a city school, and there's a lot going on. So the two yellows would be the lights that come on for an hour in the morning, hour in the evening, or hour when the school gets out. And then the pink there would be probably doing a continental-style crosswalk like they've got out here on 7th and C now. Those just seem to be a lot more eye-catching. That's our tentative design. We're going to get a meeting together with the folks from Fruitdale School. Us and the city have already kind of vetted it, and city police, and it feels like a good fit out there. I can't imagine they're going to have a concern with it, but it's time to enhance that area.
Are they permanently powered or solar?
We'll do solar on those,
Because it'd be nice to have a street light at the corner of Clover Lawn and Fruitdale.
Yeah, it's close. We could look at the option to permanently power it. I don't know where the closest drop is to there. Because
I don't either, but I know it's a concern. The city's been
Clover Lawn, the where you go jog to get on Clover Lawn?
Yeah, this is it right here. Mm-hmm. And there's no street light on either corner.
There's hedges right up to it. It's mm-hmm. It's a tight
spot. I don't go that way, so I don't know how busy that traffic intersection gets.
Oh, it's busy.
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah.
And then just bigger picture, this fall when school got back in, the sheriff's office was great. We partnered with them and had a couple of our engineering folks out there putting out tubes and just running our signboards and all that stuff. I think we have now hit all the elementary schools. We got great response and just a lot more visibility and said, hey, people are watching. I think they were actually writing some paper out in Williams. I think they did pop a few even out there. So just those fringe ones like the Fort Benoist where you're getting out of town, people are really putting the hammer down. So it was kind of a saturation public works sheriff's office that first week. I think we'll make that an annual thing, just get people back in the mentality of it's not summer, slow down. So
right.
That's what I got.
All right. Any other questions, folks?
Oh, I don't want to steal. So anybody got any guesses? You got any?
What is it? Let me see it.
I can't let you see. You're going to go through the stack and then know. Let's see.
What's here's the inside hand of them.
These two things up here, maybe?
I see handrails. Is that
looks
a
like a digital toilet tank.
Huh?
Nope. Oh, is that the electric for the charging of the buses?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How sweet is that thing? Yeah.
Wow. With a big cord on it?
Yeah. I can't remember who did the design. Logan wrapped it. I don't remember who did the design, but yeah, they're getting close. One's wrapped, the other's coming. Scott does not have the induction chargers in hand yet, but Baum is going to let us do them up there off the generator, it sounds
facilities.
Like.
Mm-hmm. Baum, it's facilities.
Oh, facilities.
Some quick use of Baum around
too
here.
Too many years,
people
right?
Crawling under the table.
So we'll use that initially, but then the induction charger will be out installed in the next 3 or 4 months. I don't think he has a rollout date for when it's going to be on the road, but that'll be good.
Logo.
Well, I like the logo on it, yeah.
Getting huge response to this.
Yeah, and we had Scott had the kind of the training session at our place Thursday, Friday for all the first responders because you're rolling up on a giant capacitor basically, and that was pretty well received. They all figured out, hey, don't touch here, flip that switch, don't flip that switch.
Right.
All these things you wouldn't have even thought about
on,
20 years
all those
ago.
Things.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
If it looks hot, it probably is. So yeah, it'd be pretty cool to get those.
Well, I remember first 20, 30 years ago, the Oral-B made a toothbrush that you charged without touching. It was all plastic, and it was like, ooh. And now here we are with these big pads you can drive with and charge it.
Yeah. The hardest part is when we got to do a 440 drop there in the parking lot.
Oh, yeah, that's no small service. No, those are really power-hungry over the short term to charge them.
I heard they have
a
barber chair now that you sit down in and it powers up, but all your hair goes in and it's cut it off.
He could just take a one swipe at it.
A Flobe, yeah. I'm sure you get good results.
That's one for the museum.
It doesn't work with me.
I can go by the brick phone in the museum.
So, yeah, he's pretty excited about that. Pretty good stuff. And the next two are already on order, so.
Good. Golly, that's good news.
Yeah, first one's in the Northwest, I think.
Alrighty.
Yeah, we're staying ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Always out in front.
Thanks, Rob.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Any additional matters?
Let me know what that meeting is for the irrigation district.
Commissioners?
Any matters from you, Dan?
No, thanks. I will not be here tomorrow.
All right. We shall miss you.
I will be in Klamath Falls, so the quorum, you two need to be there for quorum, and I am out of here.
You got a mic? The Williamstown Council met last night to elect new officers. I haven't heard how it went. I know that the secretary that was on the board became an alternate, so they had to find at least a new secretary and then vote on other board members. Also took a tour of the fairgrounds yesterday with our fairgrounds director to look at the effect the horse racing had on the fairgrounds itself and the surrounding areas, and talked about the future of finishing the soccer fields. And then some of the future possibilities of the new entrance and the remodels that are ongoing, like siding for the indoor arena, stuff like that. Pretty exciting time for our fair. We had a lot of problems that were accumulating in maintenance and usability, and now we've got people using that place. I think she booked it over 400 times for this year, the fairgrounds, one building or another, and that's a lot. And there's some money infusion with the new leases that we're going to be able to leverage into future projects. So pretty darn exciting considering where we all knew the fairgrounds was a few years ago. Really good news. So I'm glad we have an energized director as well, and look forward to that board and the director becoming even more relevant and considering the possibilities. So, and even the Y, of course, has a new director and a and some dreams and an older building, and so we'll see what happens.
I also did a tour of the fairgrounds yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciated that. I really... I do. You get to do one every week.
Or at least once a month.
So I had an overwhelming sense of how are we looking at the master plan for the county for overall stuff. Not just, I mean, here we got the fairgrounds doing it. I was surprised that they get pushback from the police department. When they call the police department, they say this is sheriff's jurisdiction. That is something that we might want to bring up at the next city-county meeting. As far as police department in the night saying they're not going to respond to calls on county properties because that's not how we've done things in the past, I don't believe. So.
That sounds odd.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring that one up. But, I mean, just the bigger picture of we have the land surrounding.
Yeah.
You know, we bought that land. What are we going to do with it? As a county as a whole, I know, I guess I didn't realize you were going to be liaison to the moving around thing, or I forgot.
Movement meeting?
The movement meeting. Is it enough? Is that committee enough for all departments, or is it in phases? Because... the library property, not just Justice Building, the community development, the old hospital. all those kind of bigger thing. There was, we had authorized Arthur to do something, but with him leaving in June, I'm just trying to think of how are we looking out ahead of what are those things that we need to be doing.
Big lift, the whole thing is.
And I think that movement meeting started with the courthouse and justice building because that's the highest priority with the police moving out. But we've also already talked about parking behind those two buildings and Dimmick. And starting after we start addressing this one and that ship starts sailing a bit, that we think that group would have value in looking at either other Josephine County properties or other pieces that want to move or need to move, whether it be parks, public works, or all that going on up at Dimmick. So there's a lot.
Identifying needs, identifying what we have to address as far and is it something we can do in-house, or does it need to be...
See what the phasing would be. First one, I agree with you, Commissioner, is that the law enforcement wing out here, that's coming up within months. We don't know about the rest of it, but I think the comprehensive looking at all of it. But how would you phase that if you looked at it?
And when do you need consultants?
I'd be interested.
To your point, Commissioner, that there are times where it's going
to
go. What
juncture do you need to consider outside of this building?
The continuity of operations beyond our election cycles.
Beyond that.
And so,
so having a plan to talk about.
Even say a department head changes or a key staff person. When somebody new can come in and say, but I see there's this overall plan that we're working towards. I just wanted to bring that up as that was the result of my tour thought. Separately, I've been contacted by somebody who's a board member of a local mining company who is interested in proposing a lease option of county properties. And so I reached out to somebody I knew on the mining advisory board just to get a feel. And the recommendation is that any proposal should go through the mining advisory committee first. So I thought I'd run that by you guys because... Yeah. That is something that they were originally tasked to do is look at county properties of best and highest use and that kind of stuff. And so instead of it coming to us, that it should maybe be routed through the advisory first. They had told me they already talked to you, and then they wanted to talk to me, and I don't know if they were coming to you next. But instead of each of us kind of, I wonder what you guys' thoughts would be on actually referring them to the mining
I think they're working on a proposal, and I said, yes, it has to go through the mining committee.
Okay.
I agree totally. I also think that Mining Advisory Committee might want to consider a name change and make it a Natural Resource Committee or something because we don't really have
mining one. Sometimes is negative to a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's a little bit narrow because we've got the forest properties and we've got tourist opportunities and natural resources. It's more than just the actual mining itself, and so.
Well, if you look at the bylaws, their function is more than just mining. It is mining, and it's all, but how is the impact to us? What are all the things that have to be looked at? I think there's some things that can go there, but I wanted to see. I got my 11, I think I moved to 11:30, so I got to really hurry because
I'm done.
No.
Just going to share one more.
I'm done.
There is a board meeting on Monday with AOC that there was a question about us allowing businesses to be sponsors that... There was a push to try to keep it that they have to be lawful with state and federal laws. That was rejected by the board, and they just said state law. And so there's going to come back to the board on Monday. Do we expand it to prohibit federal, to include a prohibition to include federal law, to keep the prohibition confined to state law, or remove the word Oregon law, leaving it ambiguous? So we'll be faced with that decision again on Monday. District 4's vote was to keep it consistent with both, since we take an oath of office to vote. And
somebody did. Some people did. I didn't.
Some scribbled.
Yeah.
Okay. I think where
they're trying to say, well, let's get federal law out of it. To me, that opens the door for an industry that I think is still a little bit on the shady side to come in, and we would be. Oh, you're being lobbied, and I think it's a huge conflict of interest.
They also are suggesting that we end the policy to prohibit selling of goods and services. So I just wanted you guys, if you have any feedback or thoughts, think on it before the end of the week because I have money.
Yeah, let's talk again on Thursday.
So I wanted to kind of have, matter of fact, I can forward the packet to y'all, but just kind of that policy there.
Gotcha.
Wanted you to be aware. So I think I would like us to ask, I'll probably do it this afternoon, of a plan of code review. When we adopted the code and got that passed, we knew that there are things that are in conflict in it. We knew that there are things that are outdated. So how do we now get it on a plan of evaluation of when do we actually start cleaning up the code? So it's
the
all in one place.
Code or?
No,
well, yeah,
the
one?
County code that got adopted
for
legal.
Oh, okay.
There are things that are... it took all the everything from different places and put it in one source, but it didn't fix it. It just put it in one source.
They didn't make sure they agreed.
So now, because they had conflicting laws, so now it's up to us to develop a plan of actually going through the code and updating.
You won't be able to park your horse in front of the Ann Basker again there.
Correct.
Dang it.
So I'm going to ask for that this afternoon. I just wanted to... and with the public meeting for parks on... Is it Wednesday night or Thursday night? Tomorrow night is our public hearing for the Parks BLM land trade. Do you think that just a presentation over each piece of parcel or just the changes? Sarah asked me for feedback. My recommendation is that we, if this is okay with you, that we go through what is the county asking for and what is the county offering and give the list over again and just go each parcel.
Yeah, I think that comprehensive view is good for the public. Absolutely. Because then you're nothing's left out. Nothing's ambiguous.
Okay. Yeah. And is it okay if we just do a PowerPoint with a couple printed options for the public? Or I don't know how many we'll need available.
Yeah, as long as it's available on the website or whatever, too.
It is available on the website. Yeah. So anything else you would ask
me? And are you going to just tackle that one alone?
No, it's all of us.
All of us? Okay.
It's an actual hearing to get feedback. Yes, ma'am.
Reminder about Thursday's meeting. Over there with the fish hatchery.
Oh, with the
Get any
other jurisdiction?
Jackson
County, I talked to and heard they will not be participating.
Gosh, it just irritates
me. Hold on. They had very specific...
reason, because they don't need the money. They got all the money in the world.
No, it wasn't that.
Ridiculous.
Well, I guess here's my response. The first time it was presented to us, my question is, when have we ever met with Army Corps of Engineers and said, what are you doing to fix it? And what's the plan? Because our first ask was, sign this letter of no confidence. And I was hesitant to do that without having given them a chance to actually fix it. We kind of rushed through and did kind of sign the letter of no confidence before going to D.C. in March, and Commissioner Pash and I went out there and presented our issues. And I had great responses from our federal delegation saying, what can we do to help? Both Wyden and Merkley's offices both said, what can we help? We'll get you some appropriations to get the repairs needed. And then the feedback was, well, no, why would you do that? We were going to get money for the counties. I'm like, my goal isn't money for the counties. My goal is to get it fixed so the fishing industries can thrive and the fish can thrive.
There's some reparation that because they've ignored it for 40 years. That's
And I don't know that we're dealing with that on Thursday, but I haven't heard yet, and that we'll have a chance to ask those questions on Thursday of what is the plan, were we moving forward. But Jackson County has got an individual presentation from our Corps of Engineers. They've had this solo, so they didn't want to come be a part of this if there was anything going on but just the report. So I would say that there's still...
When were they going to include us in their presentation from the Corps of Engineers? Were they just going to
from their standpoint, the dam is in their county. It's their dam.
Doesn't affect anybody else, huh?
So...
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying this is right. I'm just saying that there is an email that Commissioner Boyce just forwarded it. I'm not sure. Anyhow, I just wanted you to know they're not there. So we'll try to...
Okay.
Anything else?
No.
All right. So seeing that, we'll see you at 2 o'clock. We're adjourned at 11:38.
Yeah, he's dead. I've been right by there. I just couldn't remember which. Yeah, East live in Memphis, and now they live on the far other end of the state. And like, we've driven across 40 a couple of times through there. I remembered that it was near there. I was there. Yeah, it's like pretty around there now.